Expired. The Senate is now back in session. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of introduction of bills.
Introduction of bills. Senator from the 14th.
Can I have a bill?
Send it forward, please. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 418, introduced by Senators Chappelle, Nadal, and Lamping, an act relating to voting methods.
Would you care to explain the bill?
No explanation needed.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from the 8th, for what purpose do you rise?
I have a bill.
Send it forward, please.
You don't get loud, don't you?
No explanation necessary.
Further introduction of bills. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 419, introduced by Senator Krause, an act relating to the Kansas City Police Department.
Senator, would you care to explain your bill? Senator from the 8th, would you care to explain your bill? Further introduction of bills. Senator from Stoddard.
I have a bill.
Send it forward, please.
Sorry.
Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 420, introduced by Senator Mayer, an act relating to the Second Injury Fund.
Would the Senator care to explain the bill?
Mr. President, this would eliminate the Second Injury Fund.
Further introduction of bills. The chair would like to present a bill. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 421, introduced by Senator Pierce, an act relating to felons holding public office.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from Atchison.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills I'm sending forward.
Send them forward.
Are you seeing okay out of your left eye today, Mr. President?
I am. Thank you for your inquiry. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill 422, introduced by Senator Lager, an act relating to the renewable energy standard.
Would you care to explain the bill?
No.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Bill 423, introduced by Senator Lager, an act relating to natural resources.
Would you care to explain the second bill?
I'm going to bring accountability into the Department of Natural Resources.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from the 7th.
I have a bill.
Send it forward, please. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 424, introduced by Senator Cunningham, an act relating to the Secretary of State.
Would you care to explain the bill?
No explanation.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send it forward, please. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 425, introduced by Senator Goodman, an act relating to offenses in which the value of property or services is an element of the crime.
Okay, great. Senator from the 24th, further introduction of bills.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills to introduce. No explanation.
Send them forward, please. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill 426, introduced by Senator Lamping, an act relating to security deposits.
Please read the second bill.
Senate Bill 427, introduced by Senator Lamping, an act relating to the repeal of the compensating use tax.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from Stoddard.
Mr. President, I seek unanimous consent to introduce special guest.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On your right, on my left, here on the bench in the gallery, I have some special guests with me who have traveled all the way from my hometown of Dexter, Missouri to watch the Senate operate. They've come here to take place in activities regarding the Missouri Association of Insurance Agents, and they are Jason Comfort, Wes Howard, and Ed Gargis, and I would like for the body to welcome them.
Would the guests of the Senator from Stoddard who are sitting in the sunshine please stand and be recognized? Thanks for coming. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, let's go to introduction of special guests.
Seeing no objections, introduction of special guests. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection.
Seeing no objection, we are on the calendar of Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 188.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask Senate Bill 188 be put on the informal calendar.
The bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 243. Senator from the 7th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 243 be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 7th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 243 be declared perfected and ordered printed.
Proceed,
Mr. President,
Senator.
This bill has to do with an idea I got from a superintendent in my home district, Dr. Don Sinti. He's been superintendent of both Clayton School District and Parkway School District, and he's now the new incoming head of Cooperating School Districts, which is an organization of something like 50 to 60 school districts around the metropolitan St. Louis area. Most of the provisions in this bill came at his ideas because he have practiced them themselves and seen the roadblocks that he's endeavored to get over. What we're trying to do is find ways that school districts, municipalities, colleges, private organizations can come to some way to save cost, to make cost efficiencies, reduce cost, and also minimize duplicative operations. What's happening in my area is I'm proud to say that my superintendent got into an agreement with another city, another school district for the purposes of plowing for snow, storing salt, and that type of thing. They found between a number of entities, both cities and school districts, where they can best store the salt for all of them and who does the best job of snow plowing and those types of things. In his former district in Clayton, he actually went into a cooperative agreement and contract with the city of Clayton and the school district, and together they purchased a pool and a community center that can be utilized for both. It has been a wonderful operation. There are a few roadblocks to being able to do this, and so that's what we're addressing in this bill, to get rid of those roadblocks, because everyone is trying to find ways to do things in a more efficient and effective manner, and that's what this bill allows. Thank you, Mr. President.
The senator from the 7th moves adoption of Senate Bill 243. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
You know, Senator, I really appreciate your effort in sponsoring this legislation. It's very similar to some aspects of a bill that I've sponsored this year, Senate Bill 99. But I wanted to go over a few questions that I had when I read your bill. Mm-hmm. First of all, the question is, why is this needed? Why is this necessary?
because there are some technical roadblocks to them being able to do this. A lot of it is just giving ideas that I've gathered from people who've utilized these ideas very successfully. So some of this is to get the ideas out there, but you may have remembered in the House, this goes back a ways, the funds that a school district have are like silos with walls of division in between them. And over the last few years, we've tried to break down those walls so that the school districts have more flexibility in utilizing their funds in the ways they think can be best for their school district. So some of that continues what we have been doing. Some of it just makes sure that there's nothing standing in the way, like there has been legally with regard to leasing and purchasing.
So what kind of inefficiencies have you noticed in current law?
I'm sorry, say that
what
again.
What kind of inefficiencies or prohibitions have you seen under current
just
law?
Just what I just said.
Okay.
The one about those silos.
And I had a concern on line 8, page 4, the shell says that you're going to enter into these cooperative agreements, and these agreements shall include group purchasing supplies and purchasing insurance, participation deferred and deferred compensation plans, and joint leases and purchases. And I feel as though that's a little bit confining, having
you want
the shell.
You want to
and
marry
I'd like to offer an amendment on that, and I know that you agree to that. So,
that's
Mr.
True.
Speaker... Oh, Mr. President.
There is no speaker in the Missouri Senate.
I got my first gavel. Thank you, Mr. President.
Congratulations.
I have an amendment. It has not been distributed.
Send the amendment forward, please.
You want to distribute it?
Yeah. You can read it.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1, offered by Senator Chappelle Nadal, to amend Senate Bill 243, page 4, section 177.250, line 8, by striking the word, quote, shall, close quote, and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, may, close quote.
Senator moves the adoption of Senate Amendment number 1. Would you care to explain the amendment?
Yes, this is a very simple amendment. It is changing the word shall to may, which opens up cooperative efforts for school districts and other entities that care about efficiency.
Senator from the 14th moves the adoption of Senate Amendment number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from St. Francis, what purpose do you rise? Senator from the 14th yield?
Yes.
She does. Proceed.
Tell me what you're doing here. You guys had a little conversation why this is necessary, why school districts can't cooperate, and you seem to agree, and you're wanting to change one thing. Tell me what it is.
Well, here's the situation that I found. In reading this section, there are five elements that, under the shell, two entities have to abide by. And I think that if we keep it at shell, it would prohibit school districts from doing even a limited amount of sharing in their purchasing and their leasing. And they may want to do one of these items and not
so
another.
So you're saying that the bill's written so that they have to do all these things?
Yes, yes. And so
not
I'm,
that they have that option to do it.
Yes, they don't have an option. They have to do all of those things. And I'm simply changing it to May so they can
now, you said you had a similar bill to this. Why did you not think that we're cooperating, that we have to have some other legislation to get them to cooperate?
Can you say that again?
Why do we have to have legislation?
That would actually be a question for the sponsor of the original bill. But I do believe that our school districts are having more of a burden these days. And any way that school districts can participate in sharing any of their administrative costs or any of their buildings that they have, I would support that. And it's
okay.
Why it's in one of my other bills.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from St. Francis.
May I inquire the Senator of the 7th?
Senator from 7th, do you yield?
Certainly.
She does. Proceed.
Senator, are you comfortable with what she's doing to your bill?
Yes, I am. I support
well,
it.
Make me comfortable with what you're doing with your bill.
Well, did you hear the introduction?
I heard the introduction.
Okay.
It was very conceptual. but it never said why these school districts can't cooperate in the present time.
Much of this
you said there was burdens and barriers.
Much of this is our ideas to just get out there to other superintendents and school boards, but there are also some barriers in the road to doing some of the things they would like to do, particularly where they come together legally to purchase or lease a building or a piece of property. That has been complicated, and we've dealt with that before in the legislature, but we just want to make sure that nothing stands in their way to be able to purchase.
So this is just enabling school districts to work together to form organizations to buy some of these things together, and then she's saying that they may do this, and yours says they shall do this.
Yeah, and
are you comfortable with her language?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the senator from the 14th is recognized to close. Senator from the 14th moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 1. Senator from the 15th, for what purpose do you... 13th, for what purpose do you rise?
I rise to inquire the Senate, the sponsor.
Senator from 7th, do you yield? She does. Proceed.
I'm reading through this, Senator. Mm-hmm. There is also in this bill, it seems like you worked and have everyone in agreement, but what are the outdated provisions from the obsolete Senate Bill 380 that you're taking out?
Why don't you show me where you are? This doesn't have anything to do with Senate Bill 380.
Are you taking out any provisions? In addition, this act repeals a requirement that certain payments made from any source by a school district that result in the transfer of the title of real property to the school district be deducted as an adjustment to the funds payable to the district under the school funding formula. So it would be where there's brackets and...
You know what, Senator? I can't remember the exact answer to that. I'll try to get that while you're still here. I'll try to get the answer, and I apologize.
I'm sorry, Senator. I did not hear you.
I do not have the answer off the top of my head, but I will get it.
Am I the only one left to inquire of you, Senator?
I don't know.
No. You have more inquiries. Okay, I'm going to inquire from Mr. Foundation himself, and if I still have problems, then I will rise and inquire of you again.
Yeah, that'll be a good inquiry of him. Thank you.
Senator from Saline, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the sponsor.
Senator from the 7th, you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon.
And I will have to tell you, I don't have the bill in front of me, but does this allow school districts to share superintendents and other things like that?
It does.
It does?
Yes.
Thanks, Senator. That's what I need to know.
Further discussion?
To inquire of the senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th? Senator from the 7th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 14th.
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you so much. Now we could get to the rest of the bill. And I really did have some serious concerns here because of dealing with different governmental entities, the subdivisions. And I wanted to know if a tax levy is needed to cover the operational costs or a bond issue for capital improvements. The details of the spending would have to be discussed with a specific community,
right?
Wouldn't it?
Right. This allows them to come into an agreement and work all that out.
Okay. So what happens if tax dollars that are approved by voters in one school district to be used for a specific purpose and then that purpose exceeds the ballot language, what would happen then if we go overboard in one school system, in one school district?
Well, I think this is an agreement situation where both school districts or school districts and a municipality or whatever, you know, they're not going to do this unless this is going to save them money. So it gives them that encouragement and decision-making power to save money and become more efficient. So I think we're getting a little bit too big, much into the weeds rather than
leaving.
Well,
I think this is actually really important because your last line of this bill pretty much says nothing shall prohibit any of the entities identified in this section from entering into any contracts as provided in this section. And the reason why I have problems with that is it seems as though, and I'm not an attorney, and I don't want to pretend to be an attorney, but what this says is that any contract that is currently established is null and void. So are you intending to nullify the contracts with the janitorial service of a school district?
I'm not addressing that. I think what this does is make sure that we give total flexibility to our school districts. That's where it started, but it also does with any agreement they have with the municipality or anyone else. It just gives them total flexibility, and if they have a contract, they know that they have a contract.
Okay, so let me explain this a little bit more in detail. Okay, so let's just take University City School District, which I'm a board member of, and Clayton School District. So these are two different governmental entities that want to collaborate in one way or the other. Mm-hmm. So let's take busing, for example. In the school district of University City, there's actually a contract with a busing company to pick up children at the beginning of the day and deliver them home safely at the end of the day. Let's say in Clayton School District, and I don't know this to be the case, but let's say in Clayton School District, hypothetically, that school district, they have their own bus drivers. And in your language of the bill, on page 5, line 25, it includes bus drivers. And it has all of these different subdivisions. They may participate in any contracts. But if there's one contract in one school district that hires a bus company firm and another that has their own bus company, how can you share bus drivers if you have two different contracts?
I think you don't. I mean, that's up to them. You have to wait until the end of the contract, it seems to me. But
that's not written in this bill, and that's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, you have to, any contract.
But it's not written in this bill.
You don't have to, because this bill doesn't address their contract.
Okay, so here's another question then. So if you have...
Let me tell you one that did happen that you may remember in the House that may help. Do you remember when there was a district in Kansas City and they wanted to do a co-purchasing with another entity, and they happened to have used the wrong fund, those silos I was talking about, and they were penalized for that, a very heavy penalty? So those are the things that we don't want to get in the way of our school districts or our municipalities or any of them from saving money.
So you mentioned Dr. Cinti earlier. He was the former superintendent at Clayton High School, which is my high school that I went to. And you mentioned that they're already doing some cooperative efforts to reduce overall costs. My question is, what prohibits, since he's on the cooperating school districts mm-hmm. now, they already do purchasing, mass purchasing. Mm-hmm. Do they not?
I think they do. It's probably not as extensive as it used to be, but yes,
well,
my
school district says that they're pretty good at buying in bulk with the cooperating school mm-hmm. district. So I'm trying to figure out how your language here is really going to be effective if this is already happening.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th.
I ask that you lay this over on the informal calendar.
This bill will be laid over. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar. I ask you to recognize the Senator from Atchison on Senate Bill 188.
Senate bills on the informal calendar. The senator from Holt.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 188 be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Atchison.
Thank you. I move for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute. Mr. President, for nearly 40 years in the state of Missouri, our employment law has mirrored or followed that of federal law. And unfortunately, beginning in 2003, through Missouri court decisions, they have literally reshaped the traditional understanding of unemployment law. The net effect of these court opinions have been to lower the bar for plaintiff's attorneys bringing lawsuits against employers. And it's unfortunate because this has traditionally been granted by the federal government in similar lawsuits. What we are doing today is we are attempting to try to go back and take Missouri statute and mirror that of the federal government in the Civil Rights Act. Mr. President, this profound move that has occurred throughout the courts, both by the Supreme Court and the appellate courts over the last decade, have expanded the ability of employers to bring lawsuits against employers. Missouri courts once closely followed federal precedent for employment law. However, that has completely and been dramatically changed. In fact, in an article in the Journal of the Missouri Bar, they observed that Missouri courts have expanded protections in many ways beyond the long-tested and well-developed federal employment discrimination protections. This evolving public policy of Missouri, as interpreted by Missouri courts, has created a new era in the Missouri employment discrimination arena. As the branch of government that is constitutionally empowered to make public policy decisions, I believe this legislature, I believe this legislature needs to be watchful and, most importantly, needs to restore the balance. Senate Bill 188 is the public policy proposal to bring Missouri courts and Missouri employment law back into alignment with the Civil Rights Act of 1964. There are essentially six provisions in this bill. The first provision changes contributing factor to a motivating factor. Traditionally, Missouri courts have held that in order for a plaintiff to be successfully sue his or her employer, it must be shown that the employer's decision to fire them was primarily because of discrimination over a protected trait. And specifically, in 1991, the U.S. Congress clarified this, that it should be a motivating factor. In 2007, unfortunately, the Missouri Supreme Court broke from this precedent and ruled that if a plaintiff could show that discrimination was even a contributing factor, so the absolute lowest bar possible, that the case could proceed. Previously, a judge would likely throw out such a case with summary judgment rulings. So as a result, two of the provisions. The first provision says, number one, it's going to be a motivating factor, and number two, we are reestablishing summary judgment within state statute. Who qualifies as an employer? Once again, through judicial interpretation and judicial action, they have expanded that definition so broad that now individuals can be individually sued for discrimination even though they are acting on behalf of their employer. Once again, this is a complete and total move away from the way that not only precedent in our state, but from federal law. We are bringing that back in and saying that individuals are no longer liable. However, the company is. I talked about summary judgment. This also puts into place the business judgment rule. If a Missouri plaintiff brings an Employment Discrimination Act in federal court, there is a business judgment rule in which the defendant can essentially ask that the business judgment instructions be given. Essentially, this has not been happening in state law, state court. This puts it back into effect. This legislation also puts into effect damage limitations. Once again, all we are doing is taking Missouri law and mirroring it to federal law. So those damage caps are the exact same under state statute that they are under federal statute. In 2003, the Missouri Supreme Court found a constitutional right to a jury trial in all employment discrimination cases. We actually codify that in this legislation. And finally,
excuse me, Senator. There's a lot of outside noise going on, a lot of conversation. Would you please turn the volume down or take your discussions to the side gallery? We do not want to become the House. Senator, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Finally, the final provision is the whistleblower provision. And essentially what it says is that in Missouri, unfortunately what happened is under a Missouri appeals court, they expanded the ability to use whistleblower. What this says is if a company actually does something wrong and you take the steps necessary to bring that forward, then you will have whistleblower protection. However, you cannot use it as broad as what the courts have ruled, and as a result, we are bringing it back in the way that it was actually intended, not the way that courts have changed it to. Once again, Mr. President, to sum this up, Senate Bill 188 is a public policy proposal. Unfortunately, what has happened with employment law in our state is courts have dictated it. It is time that the legislature in the public policy process determines what our employment law is going to be. And what Senate Bill 188 does is it puts forward a package that mirrors Missouri employment law to federal employment law, just like we practiced in this state for 40 years. So if you're an employee or you're an employer, when you go into state court or you go into federal court, you are guaranteed the same rights and the same treatment, regardless of which court you're in. With that, Mr. President, I renew my motion, and I have an amendment.
The senator from Mercer moves the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 188. He has an amendment. Please send the amendment forward.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the amendment. I believe it's being distributed. I request a waiver of the reading, and I will not close until we know it's been distributed.
It has been distributed, and seeing no objection, the reading will be waived.
Thank you, Mr. President. As I said, I move for the adoption of the amendment. This amendment does two things. First, it adds language to clarify that there is no individual liability under the aiding and abetting provisions of the Missouri Human Rights Act. Once again, what we're trying to do is make sure we are consistent with federal law, and federal law does not allow individuals that liability. The second piece of this, what it does, is it adds the reference to the 1991 amendment to the Federal Civil Rights Act to avoid any claim or any confusion that this bill is different from federal law. Once again, Senate Bill 188 is a simple piece of legislation that merely mirrors Missouri employment law to federal employment law. With that, Mr. President, I move for the adoption, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
The senator from Worth moves adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 10th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Andrew.
Senator from Andrew, you?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, specifically relating to this amendment, what page is this? Okay. Is this 0.05S? Is that the amendment that you're on?
0.05S, yes, Senator.
Okay. And you are on then page 5 of the bill, is that correct?
Hold on, let me grab the substitute here. It looks like we are on page 5, section 213.070.
Okay, line 18. After the word subdivisions, you're putting "and shall not provide a basis for any individual liability."
Right, and this is to clarify that under this provision that there is not individual liability, which mirrors the federal act.
And then further amends said bill on page 6.
Right.
Section 213.101. Make sure I'm in the right place.
Line 29.
After the word progeny, is that correct?
Yep. Inserting in there clarification that this is to mirror the federal act as amended in 1991 by the legislation carried and passed by Senator Jack Danforth. Great Missourian. How about that for a little history lesson?
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's why I came here today. My question is, if what we're trying to do is mirror the act, I mean, why do we have, I guess, all the other language that you're proposing today?
For example?
Well, And, I mean, I didn't want to get into this now on your amendment, but I'm happy
to do it. We can do it now, or we can do it later on the actual bill. I'm good either way.
Well, let's start, I guess, just on page one, then, where we define because or because of.
Uh-huh.
Right now, the way you've got it drafted, because or because of, as it relates to a decision or action, the protected criterion was a motivating factor.
Correct.
Is that language directly from the federal statute?
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's directly from it. Basically, what it is that language, as is all the language through here, once again, it is intended to make sure that we are mirroring the federal statute as amended in 91, and specifically on this, as you know, we've had a lot of discussion about A contributing, the contributing, A motivating, B motivating, all of those types of things. And really what we're trying to make sure of is that we get our definition in Missouri to the same definition as the feds, which is A motivating factor.
So how is because or because of defined now in Missouri?
I'm not sure how it's defined now, to be honest with you. I think this was for clarification, to be honest.
So, okay, you don't know how it's defined now in Missouri. How is it defined on the federal level?
What's that?
How is it defined on the federal level?
I would assume it's defined as a motivating factor.
And is that according to the actual law itself, the statute, or is that according to case law interpreting the statute?
I believe it's the actual statute itself,
okay.
I hope.
I guess that's been my, as
we've worked through this process, my request as we've done the drafting, as we've worked through the entire process, was very simple. This doesn't need to be a complex proposal. What we need to do is craft a public policy, a legislative proposal that moves Missouri employment law back into a line with federal employment law, just like it was practiced in this state for 40 years.
Well, couldn't we just do something simply like the state of Missouri? I don't know. I'm not good at drafting.
You're on the fly. I understand.
On the fly like that. But couldn't we just say the state of Missouri's employment discrimination law is exactly the same as the federal? This is 9 pages, and it looks to me like there are some things in here that don't mirror federal law. And
the,
so it seems to me that if we want to be just like the feds, which, by the way, I think is funny because we've spent a lot of time in this chamber over the last few weeks, and in fact the last couple of years, saying how we don't want to be just like the feds, and now we want to be just like them. So I guess my question is, my question is,
please refrain from any audible.
Does that include me?
Interruptions. No.
Oh, interruptions. Okay.
This
Thank
is between
you.
The two senators that are debating. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. So my question is, isn't there something simply that we could insert that just says the state of Missouri's employment discrimination laws are to follow exactly the federal law? I mean, why do we have to have all of the other language?
I wish, to be real honest with you, I wish we wouldn't even have to do this, but unfortunately, through the judicial system, Missouri law began to change and no longer tracked case law, or I'm sorry, no longer tracked the federal law. And so as a result of that, now we're dealing with it statutorily. And although we would all like to hope, for lack of a better term, that this would be a simple fix, the reality is sometimes when we're dealing with our friends across the street, we have to be very specific in what we detail out. And that is the attempt. That is what we are doing here. That is why we're trying to. It's unfortunate that this legislature has to come forward and spend the amount of time that we're going to spend on this to take Missouri back to the same way of practicing employment laws we have for 40 years because our friends across the street decided to change it. And the reason, because you actually brought up a good point, why do we want to be like the feds? The reason for that is as you know, we are in the most competitive job environment that we've ever seen. And what we are trying to do here is make sure that if you're an employer in Missouri, whether you're just in Missouri or you're an employer in numerous states, the reality is that you have the same rights and protections under Missouri law as you do federal law, as you do many other states. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that our employers, once again, are on a level playing field. And when I talk about level playing fields, there's multiple aspects to it, from the regulatory piece to the legal piece to the taxation piece. I mean, there's multiple pieces of that. But the reality is, unfortunately, we are dealing with Senate Bill 188 because the legal component in our state is no longer in balance. And we are trying to bring that back into alignment with the Civil Rights Act
of 1964 and the amendment and as amended in 1991.
So there's no simple fix then where we could just say, we repeal basically all of Missouri's human rights laws and just say that for purposes of employment discrimination, the state of Missouri adopts federal law as it relates to employment discrimination and all of the cases.
I wish it was that simple, but as we've gone through this process, unfortunately, we have had to, in our desire to make sure we were clear, unfortunately at times that becomes lengthy.
Well, no, I understand. I mean, it's lengthy, and so I guess we can just kind of go through the bill and figure out,
sure,
make sure that it is, it does mirror, in fact, federal law.
And I'm flexible if you want to do it now, or if you want to go ahead and adopt the amendment, which adds in fixes a couple of the clarification points, and then we do it. I mean, I'm indifferent on when we do it. So
now,
it's really up to you, Senator.
I'd like to go through it a little bit. I had a couple of amendments that I'd like to propose, and I want to make sure that by that you don't amend a portion and then make it so that I can't previously amended material. So talking just briefly about the motivating factor.
Yes.
You want to take it and say that it's not a contributing factor, but a motivating factor. Why is that? Why do you want that change?
Actually, in 1991, when they passed the amendment to the Civil Rights Act, they specifically spelled out in there that the threshold would be a motivating factor. Now, what's happened in our state was that was not clearly defined anywhere in state statute. And so what happened is through court cases and through judicial interpretation, essentially they have created a standard which is a motivating factor, which, as you know, is the lowest possible bar. And so what we are trying to do is we're trying to say, listen, for 40 years, Missouri employment law mirrored federal employment law. Federal employment law was very clear. It's a motivating factor. And so, therefore, as a result, we're going to mirror that back up, and we clearly spelled that out in this legislation.
In which case was that, and you said it was 1991? Or no, that was the, I'm that, sorry.
Yeah, 1991 was when they, is when they did the amendment at the federal level that clearly defined motivating.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember right, it was a 2007 Supreme Court that broke this precedent, if I remember correctly. I don't remember the case off the top of my head. I just remember that it was in 2007. Let me see if I have. I'm sure I have it somewhere. Let's see here. I just have that it adopted in 91 or clarified in 91, changed in 2007 through judicial action of the Missouri Supreme Court.
Okay, but we don't know the name of that case.
Sorry about that,
okay,
Senator.
All right, so that's the first thing. The second thing that you talked about was the definition of employer.
Yes.
And right now, how does the definition of employer differ under your bill from current law?
Well, for 40 years, individuals were never liable. And specifically, the way employer has always been defined has been the entity. So if the employer, meaning the business, mm-hmm, whoever's acting on behalf of the business, if they violated one of these sections, then the business would be at risk of punishment. What happened is in recent years, I say recent years, I think in just the last 5 to 7 years, once again through a judicial interpretation, they broadened that. They broadened it to include employees. And although, you know, many people have many thoughts of why that happened, I can't tell you specifically why it did, but what I know is as a result of that, two things have occurred. One is when they allowed employees to be brought into it, it essentially provided venue change opportunities. So in 2005, this legislature took very specific action and stopped venue shopping. By pulling in individual employees, we opened that tool, for lack of a better term, back up. The second thing that it did is specifically for the first time in the history of employment law in our state, it made individual managers personally liable. And that's never been a practice of employment law in our state, and that's why we're taking it back to the way that it was.
And how is employer defined under federal law then? Is there, do you
the
know
entity,
the specific?
Yeah, again, at the entity level, not at the individual level.
And Okay, and so that's how it's defined under federal law then, and that's why you've done the change. And essentially by taking out individual liability, one thing that I have a kind of a concern about is this going to result in Missouri companies not being able to remove state claims into federal court? Because right now, you know, the only way that you can get into federal court is either through, you know, having a federal law that you're, you know, trying to have interpreted, or diversity jurisdiction. And if you take out that individual liability piece, will Missouri companies still be able to remove the case to federal court, where I'm presuming everyone wants to be?
Well, I guess my personal perspective on this is it will operate no differently than it did prior to these changes coming into place in the last few years. So my understanding is, Senator, for decades that was not a problem, and therefore I don't anticipate, I sure hope, there's no problem under here. I have no reason to believe that situation that you just articulated, that would be a new challenge. That is not by any means our intent.
Because my concern is, and you'll have to forgive me, Senator, as you know, I represent
Sure. Basically
kids in the foster care
yep,
system.
Absolutely.
This is not my area of practice.
And yeah, I'm not even a lawyer. I'm just a small business guy that wants a fair and
I totally understand.
Equitable stake.
And I haven't had any cases in federal court in probably a decade. But at the time when I was representing companies, you know, one of the things that we always wanted to do was try to remove something to federal court. And when you have that individual that can be on the hook and you're an out-of-state company, you've got this ability
sure.
to get into, I'm sorry, you're an in-state company, you've got this ability to get into federal court. And it seems to me now that we may have a situation where you've got someone like, who's a homegrown, you know, I talked about him earlier today, Boulevard Brewing Company, they wouldn't be able to remove their case to federal court because we're doing away with this, whereas Anheuser-Busch, who's no longer, unfortunately, a Missouri company, would still be able to. And I just want to make sure that we're confident that we're not messing that up in any way.
It is. I have no reason to believe that we are doing anything to make it more difficult to move into federal court than it would have been prior to these changes as they've evolved over the last few years.
Okay. Also, in addition, though, to the piece where we're taking out the individual liability, we talk about employers shall not include the United States, a corporation wholly owned by the government of the United States. Then we talk about the individual, an Indian tribe, or any department or agency of the District of Columbia subject to statute, to procedures of the competitive service as defined in 5 U.S.C. section 2101, or a bona fide private membership club, other than labor organizations, which is exempt from taxation under 26 U.S.C. section 501C. And there's some more language in there. Is that new language for Missouri?
No, that's the same as the federal. And like, in my understanding, like I specifically ask about the, it very well might be new for Missouri. It's because we're trying to mirror federal. And I specifically ask about the clubs, like why private clubs? And private clubs have always been exempted under federal law.
Under federal.
So what we're trying to do is make sure the Missouri law mirrors the Civil Rights Act as closely as possible. And that's why that's why we've taken the steps we've taken, Senator.
So at this point, discrimination in Missouri is going to be okay if it takes place at a private country club?
You know, I don't think so, and here's why. Let's remember the dynamic of when the Civil Rights Act was signed and the individuals who took part in that era, people like Martin Luther King, who fought so hard to advance that initiative. And once again, if those provisions were put in, you would like to believe they were put in for legitimate reasons, have not been abused over time. I have no reason to believe they've been abused over time. And once again, Senator, I mean, this is about us taking Missouri law and mirroring it to federal law, specifically the Civil Rights Act. And so once again, it's just they've always been exempted, and that's why that language is in here, as I said before. So yeah, I just wanted to clarify that. I'm sorry, I didn't not trying to derail your process.
Do you know what a bona fide private membership club is? I mean, what is a private membership club? Is that something like a country club or a, I don't know, cigar club? Or, I mean, I don't know what that is.
I don't know.
And then does this, to me, this also reads that nonprofits anyone who has a tax exemption, and then also any corporations and associations owned by religious or sectarian groups, that they'll also be exempt from discrimination laws in the state of Missouri?
Again, just as it is today under federal law. That's all mirrored straight to the federal statutes.
Boy, this really would be a lot easier if we just adopted the federal statute.
I understand,
instead
Senator.
Of coming up with our own language, because it's making me increasingly nervous that we're drafting our own. Okay. On section, on page 4,
okay.
Section 213.070, so it's lines 1 through 8. What is this subsection? It says, except as provided in subsection 2 of this section, it shall be unlawful discriminatory practice. What is section 2, and why are we treating it differently?
Let's see here. 213.055. Hold on just a second. Let's flip back over there. It should be. I don't know that section off the top of my head, Senator.
Okay.
I'll have to make a note there and look that up. But if I remember.
Because right now we're.
I don't want to try to guess at it, to be very candid.
Because right now we're setting out what all of the unlawful discriminatory practices are, but we're saying that this one thing's okay, and I just wanted to know what that one thing was. Curious to know what form of discrimination is acceptable in the state of Missouri. This passes. Okay, so that's an outstanding question that I have. And then on this actually goes to the heart of, I think, your amendment. On page 5, section 213.101, this language that you're including, this chapter is intended to be consistent with Title VII. That's where you're trying to set out and say that it's the policy of the state of Missouri that we follow federal law. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the many places. And what my amendment does is specifically clarifies, including the 1991 amendments to Title VII of the Civil Rights Act.
Okay.
That's on line 29 that you referenced.
So that's saying that we need to defer to federal law, or that we're intending to defer to federal law on that. And then the second paragraph there, it says, in interpreting and applying this chapter in employment cases, courts shall rely heavily upon judicial interpretations. So not only are we intending to mirror federal law, we're intending to mirror federal court decisions interpreting the federal law. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you are comfortable with the state of Missouri basically turning over our own laws and saying, we're going to mirror federal law and we're going to mirror the federal court cases. I mean, that makes me a little nervous, and
here's what I'm comfortable with, Senator. I'm comfortable that I want to make sure that Missouri employers are treated equally, whether they're in state court or they're in federal court. I want to make sure that employers who have operations in multiple states are treated as fair here as they are in the other states that they're doing business in. And I think that for a consistency perspective, to ensure that our statutes continue to mirror federal statutes, specifically the Civil Rights Act, mm-hmm. I actually believe that's good public policy. And to be very candid, that's one of the reasons that we're having this debate, is because Missouri judicial interpretation changed much of the way that worked.
Is there evidence that our employers are being treated unfairly right now in Missouri courts?
Well, I will tell you that the employers believe they are being treated unfairly.
What statistics have they given you that shows, I mean, are there an exorbitant number of plaintiffs' verdicts? I mean, I asked that because I had some folks give me some information about the big verdicts in Kansas City over the last few years. And, I mean, I'm not seeing big numbers at all. I'm seeing plaintiffs only winning about half of the time, actually less than half of the time, about 44% of the time. And the average verdict is about $136,000. That's not the kind of...
Well, I think from my understanding, yes, from my understanding, this is a significant problem. And it's a significant problem in that not always, but often what happens is businesses feel like they have to settle. Because if they end up in Missouri court under the current way that law is practiced, they're doomed, to be very candid. And so they settle, thereby, you know, driving up insurance premiums, driving up costs, driving up all the things, whether they're guilty or not, is no longer relevant. Because at that point, what happens is they make a business decision to try to stop this unfair practice at the lowest cost possible. And that, Senator, is why I think that it's so important that we address these challenges. I mean, if a business or an entity of any kind if they have legitimately broken the law, this and what we are doing today will not stop that from moving forward. Because all we're doing today is mirroring the Civil Rights Act and ensuring that employment law is dealt with in our state the exact same way it was done for nearly 40 years before our courts began to change it. And again, I would humbly submit that the constitutional responsibility to establish public policy lies with the legislative branch, and that's why I believe this is a very legitimate discussion. And if you have different beliefs and opinions, you know, that's wonderful, and I think that's part of what makes this process healthy. And if you would like to change some of these proposals, as you said, you had some amendments, we're going to be happy to entertain those. But that's why I believe so strongly that this public policy debate must fall within the legislature and not just leave it to the judicial system to rewrite employment law in Missouri.
Well, I guess this next question I have then goes to the heart of what you just said, because the next question I have is about line 17 on page 5, section 3, where it says the General Assembly intends expressly to abrogate by the statute the case of McBride versus Rittenour School District. Abrogate's a big word, but it's my understanding that we're just trying to say that's not the law of the state of Missouri. What we're doing here today is the law of the state of Missouri.
Right.
Is that what they mean by that?
Basically, my understanding is what we are saying right there is that, listen, the case law that's been established, that courts are now following, is no longer going to be the public policy of our state. That what we are doing here today, and in this particular section, as it relates to the business judgment instruction, that we are going to allow that as we move forward. So it's about statute. It's about what this group, this legislature, whatever can pass the House and the Senate,
mm-hmm.
that is the new public policy, not
okay.
the case law.
And so if we're specifically saying that this is no longer the law in Missouri, I'd like to know what it was. What was the McBride versus Rittenour School
well,
District case?
Well, my understanding on business judgment, and let me see if I have the case that that talks about specifically about this. I remember reading it earlier, Senator. Let me see if I have that stuff down here with me. I mean, essentially, I don't have the case, unfortunately. I'm going to assume this to be it. Basically, for 40 years, you could ask for a business judgment or the business judgment in mm-hmm. instruction to be given. And then following a case, I'm going to assume it to be this case, the courts stopped doing that.
So do you remember the facts of the case by any chance?
I sure don't. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a simple business guy that wants a better legal climate for all the employers in our state.
You know, and I'm just...
And I just want to mirror federal statute. Mirror state statute to federal statute, specifically the Civil Rights Act. I don't know how much more
simple.
So
just the Civil Rights Act, though. You don't want to just wholesale adopt all the federal government.
I'm not going to adopt all the federal government. I'm not sure the senator from the first would let us go that far.
We should just turn it over to them altogether.
Well, I'm not sure I'm ready to go that far.
All
but
right.
I do think it's important that we have a fair and
okay, so you don't know the facts
system.
Of this case. Do you remember what the specific holding was in the case that led to the folks who drafted this legislation to include it here?
Which part? I'm sorry.
The specific holding of the court. What was it specifically that
I think they essentially. I think they essentially stopped the use of business judgment.
The business judgment instruction.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay.
And that's my understanding of it.
Okay. And then.
And as you know, that is allowed under federal. Again, we're just trying to mirror the Civil Rights Act, Senator.
Which we should just say. The Civil Rights Act is the law of the state of Missouri.
If we did that and we could trust our friends across the street, a lot of things would be easier in this building.
Got it.
Actually, we wouldn't even be doing this.
All right. Line 21,
okay.
Which is Rule 74.04 of the Missouri Rules of Civil Procedure. Which rule is that?
I have no idea, Senator.
So why are we including it here? Because that obviously... I mean, does that also mirror federal law, and that's why we're including it?
Yeah. Senator, everything that's in this bill the wonderful folks down in research as they've drafted this and done the tremendous work that we pay those highly paid people to do is all because of a very simple request. Make Missouri employment law mirror federal employment law, specifically through the Civil Rights Act and as amended in 1991. I'm a country kid from Northwest Missouri. This is a very simple process for me. I can't get too complex and all the lawyer lingo that, you know, the senator from the 15th and some of these high paid lawyer guys like to throw around out here. I mean, I know you do just defense work and for helping those children, and
exactly
as you said, it's been a while since you've
and that's why, I mean, if it truly was, I hate to keep going back to this, but
that's
I
right.
guess you keep going back to the mirror and yeah. the fast 40 years and that sort of thing. So I'm going to keep going back to the fact, if we really want to simply mirror federal law, why don't we just adopt federal law, refer to it, and say that's it? That's, I mean, because now we're referring to the Missouri Rules of Civil Procedure, and I have to suspect that Missouri's Rules of Civil Procedure, that they vary in some way, shape, or form from the federal rules of civil procedure. Once again, I don't practice in federal court anymore, so I don't know the answer to that. But
I've never been in federal court, Senator, so I hope I never end up there.
I hope you're not either. I can't imagine that it would be a fun time if you ended up in federal court. So you don't know what the Missouri Rule of Civil Procedure 74.04 is, but you probably are going to tell me that if we included it, it was so that we are going to mirror exactly federal law. Okay.
You have predicted my...
I'm starting to catch on. Maybe I could just answer all of my questions myself with that same answer. Okay.
Would you like for me to sit down and you can have a one-person debate?
Okay, so probably a waste of my time then to ask you what the Price Waterhouse case is. I don't know. Because now we're saying that we think that when it has to do with Rule 74.04, that we think the case of Price Waterhouse v. Hopkins and its progeny are highly persuasive. So what was the Price Waterhouse case? If we're going to say that this is what's persuasive to the state of Missouri, I want to know what's in it.
Well,
do you know what it says or what it does?
Not off the top of my head, Senator, but I'm sure someone can get you that information.
Issue. Starting to sound like some of my law school professors. What was the holding? And its progeny. Do you have any idea which cases are the progeny of the Price Waterhouse decision?
Sure don't, Senator. I'll let you look that up. Or have someone look it up for you.
Okay.
Again, I mean, I'm not trying to be difficult here. I mean, my thought process is pretty simple.
No, I understand your thought process, and I respect that. But, I mean, the reality is that if we are trying to simply mirror, I don't know why we have all of these other things in here. I haven't been around here but 5 years, but this is the first time I remember specifically going through and case by case abrogating decisions that Missouri courts. I mean, I haven't done that since I've been here.
If I remember right, I remember doing it in 2005 when we did the large tort reform bill.
Sure.
I believe there were some cases in there that were abrogated as well.
And I get nervous if we're specifically saying, I mean, what if there was some portion of this case that doesn't apply to this and we're getting rid of that as well? I mean, it just...
And as the senator from the 11th was so kind to remind me, we also did it in workers' comp. So it's not unprecedented.
We did it in workers' comp, but now we're going back and fixing that because that was kind of an oops.
Well, that's what that's yet to be debated, but yes, we're going to do something in workers' comp.
Got it. So are we going to be back here in another 5 years? I won't be, but
But I would be willing to bet that if the courts continue to rewrite Missouri law, that the General Assembly will continue to come back and clarify their intent. So I don't know when it'll happen next, but I'd be willing to predict, as it happened in 05, now it's happening in 2011, one could probably make a pretty significant argument that this is not going to be the last legal rebalancing that we have in our state.
Well, I guess I have the same concerns about the next paragraph, which lists just a string of cases and their progeny, saying that we're specifically abrogating every single one of those. And I just, I guess I get a little bit nervous when we don't even know what the facts of each of those cases were, what the legal issues at stake were in those cases, what the holdings of the courts were, and yet we're specifically saying that those cases are no longer valid in the state of Missouri.
Senator, my belief of what that is doing is all those different, those five or six different points that I talked about when I opened, these are many of the cases that have redefined the employment law. And so what we're saying is today the precedent that they're following are is the precedent that was set within many of these cases. But if this bill was to pass, what we're saying is that's no longer the process we're following. The process we're now following is what is going to be laid out in this proposal. And so that is why we will be, that's why we're taking the steps we're taking, Senator.
Got it. And then my last question about abrogation, and then I'll stop on that issue, is the last sentence on under Section 5 on page 6, which is lines 42 and 43, we also are abrogating Missouri-approved jury instructions. I'm assuming for the exact same reasons that you said, so I won't make you repeat all of that.
Thank you.
I do find it really odd that we're including an approved jury instruction in it. I mean, I understand if we are going to specifically say to the courts, we didn't like your decision in this, this, and this. That's the purpose of the equal branches of government, and
sure,
we have the ability to do that. The jury instruction process is something that's a little bit different, though, and I mean, the way jury instructions, is this the mechanism to do that, and is it responsible for us to start messing with jury instructions?
Well,
I guess,
once again, the reason that we are having to address this is through either judicial interpretation and or jury instruction. That is how, those are the paths they've used to fundamentally change employment law in our state. And so if we are going to return us back to the point where we mirror the Civil Rights Act and we mirror federal law on this to ensure Missouri's employers are treated the same, whether in Missouri court or federal court, then you have to make sure that the public policy that we are setting forth today is there's no confusion about what they're going to follow. And that is why my understanding and my belief of why that is in there, Senator.
Okay. Further down that page, it looks like we took out the word occurred and put in been committed. It's down on lines 18 and 19.
Yeah.
Do you know what that's all about?
I'm not sure why that one change was made, to be honest with you.
And that's a question I
occurred versus been
still
committed.
Have. I'd be curious if anyone's listening what that's purpose of that one is and whether that also helps us mirror federal law. Turning to page 7. On lines 34 and 35, it says any party to an action initiated under the section may demand a trial by jury. Can you not demand a jury trial now?
Right. The way it works right now, and if I remember correctly, it was in a 2003 court case. Yep. In 2003, the Missouri Supreme Court found a constitutional right to a jury trial in a discrimination case or an employment discrimination case. And so all we did was go ahead and codify. I believe that's good public policy, to be very candid with you, Senator. And so I went ahead and codified it in this legislation.
So if it's already the law,
I just thought it was, I thought that, you know, as much of this of the court action as I want to change, I actually found a nugget that I thought was pretty good. So I thought I'd keep the nugget.
Do you happen to remember which case that was in 2003?
I don't remember. I do not.
Okay.
I just remember it was 2003, Senator.
Maybe it was one of those cases we're abrogating, and that's why we have to put it in here, because we're doing away with that right with our abrogating language before. And so to make sure that we still have that constitutional right, we've got to put it back in.
Senator, you might be wrong to something there. That makes sense anyway.
I wonder what else might be in the cases that we're abrogating.
If you keep talking long enough, you're going to end up voting for this.
Yeah. I guess what my concern is, Senator, is there anything else in those cases that we're abrogating, like the constitutional right to a jury trial, that we're doing away with because we haven't described in detail what were in those cases? That's a concern that I have.
Sure, I understand.
Okay, now we go to damages, which is the fun part, everybody's favorite part of these cases. The way I'm reading this now, we are doing two things. We're capping damages, and then we're doing away with punitive and non-compensatory damages. Is that correct?
Yeah, what we are doing is we are mirroring Missouri's damages to the same as the federal damages. So whether you're in Missouri court or you're in federal court, your treatment, in this case, damages, are the same.
Because I think I've got, and I talked to someone in the hall today who tried to explain to me that that's what they were attempting to do.
Uh-huh.
But my fear is the way this is drafted, that we actually are not doing that. Because
okay.
It's my understanding under federal law right now, there are punitive and non-compensatory damages that are allowed, but they're capped.
Okay.
When I read this, starting on line 36 of page 7, it says that the sum of the amount of actual damages, including damages for future pecuniary losses, and it lists off a whole bunch of things there,
yep,
shall not exceed for each complaining party actual back pay and interest on back pay.
Right.
So, to me, that reads the only damages.
But then there's the word.
The pain. Only damage. Sorry, I just got
oh,
those notes.
Right.
You know how you get the notes?
Yep, absolutely. See, if we had computers, they could email that to you.
I know, but you were opposed to that.
I am.
Okay. So, it says here that the damages shall not exceed for each complaining party actual back pay and interest on back pay. To me, that says all that you can get under state law now is actual back pay and interest on back pay.
And,
is that your intention?
No, and. See that word and?
And.
And then you go down through the provisions.
But it says and it just lists the caps. It doesn't say and you're also entitled to.
And in the case of a respondent who has more than 5 and fewer than 100 employees,
that's
the
size of
20 or more calendar weeks, you can, or preceding calendar year, $50,000. So, actual back pay and interest on back pay, and in that particular case, $50,000. And then it steps itself up, once again, mirroring the federal legislation, the federal law, otherwise known as the Civil Rights Act.
So you don't read it the way I'm reading it, which is that you are limited to actual back pay and interest on back pay within the cap.
That's not the way I read it.
Okay, because that's how I'm reading it. And maybe it's just because I'm kind of a stickler for the way these things are worded. And it, to me, it reads that we're limiting now damages to actual back pay and interest on back pay. And that back pay and interest on back pay cannot exceed the caps that we're setting out. So that's
well, again,
a concern that I have. Because if that's the case, that does not mirror federal law. And my concern is that in this situation, you may have an employer who looks at, you know, the situation and says, okay, look, I've got this employee who just was diagnosed with cancer.
Right.
And her health care costs are now going through the roof and they're taking all of our costs with us. I can't afford to keep her on the payroll anymore. And even though I know it's discriminatory, all I'm going to have to give her is her back pay and interest on back pay. And that's a heck of a lot cheaper than paying her health care costs as she goes through chemo for the next few years. So I'm just going to fire her because the cost utility, I mean, it doesn't balance out. It's cheaper to fire someone than it is to pay their health care costs when all I have to pay them is the back pay that they've lost. And even if I'm reading it incorrectly and some court decides that that's not the limit and all they get is back pay and $50,000, that to me still is a decision that an employer could make pretty darn easily and just say, look, it's going to be cheaper just to get rid of this person, even though it's intentional discrimination, because I don't have to pay out more than this. And I think that's fundamentally why I have a huge problem with this portion of your bill.
Sure. I understand that we just fundamentally have a difference of opinion on that.
Do you not have any concerns that there'll be employers who make that kind of cost-benefit analysis and just say, you know what, just like the Ford Pinto folks, it's actually cheaper to pay off the dead people than it is to fix the exploding bumper, so I'm just going to go ahead and pay off the dead people.
I think that the unfortunate reality is that there are always going to be people that maybe don't follow what you and I would consider to be the most moral or ethical practices. and it is up to our judicial system to do the best job possible to punish that when it happens, if at all possible. But once again, Senator, my desire on this legislation, thus the reason it's drafted the way it is to make sure that Missouri employment law mirrors federal employment law, specifically the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the amendments that were brought forward, excuse me, in 1991.
And it is your interpretation that the caps will be back pay, which has no limitation other than it can be calculated physically what the person lost, including
whatever
interest.
However it's going to work under federal law is what I ask to be drafted for state law. And it is my belief that I'm going to have the faith and confidence in the good people downstairs who drafted it, as well as all those who are running around this hall.
So the people downstairs drafted this? Because I was told this dude standing out in the hall drafted it.
I have no idea. But whenever we received it, and Rich has been working with every time I ask for a change, Rich in my office works with the folks downstairs to get it put together for a new, whether it was the Senate committee sub, whatever it was.
I understand that.
I can't tell you that maybe there were portions or parts of it that were drafted years ago somewhere else. It's not like this is the first year this bill has ever made it into this mm-hmm. body. But to be very candid, I just want to make sure that we're moving forward in a mechanism that keeps us in alignment with the federal law.
Okay. I just was curious because all morning long I got text messages saying the drafter of this bill needs to talk to you right now. And it wasn't someone from the basement. That's why I was
curious. See, the drafter of the bill is meeting with you. It's interesting.
Okay. At section 5 at the bottom of page 7 starts with line 56. There are several sections that are exempted. It looks like they relate to housing. Do you know
Yes.
what those sections are and why they're exempted?
There were issues specifically around federal funding, and specifically from the housing within the housing authority. And so the concern was that there's been a lot of confusion, to be very candid, on what we were being told from the folks at the federal level on the way their housing process works, and to make sure that we are in alignment. And so what we did was we made sure that we in Missouri mirrored the federal process, and specifically within the housing components, they've always been exempt. And so that is why number 5 is in there, because that is what keeps us, that ensures that we are in compliance and will not lose any federal funding in regards to the housing.
And do we have the final word on that? Because I have I've been inundated with these letters from different agencies,
sure.
from legal memoranda, from every
looks My like understanding
law firm
is,
in the
Senator,
state.
Because there's been a lot of discussion about this.
Sure.
There are two points of confusion. The first point is I believe the initial letters were issued last year when that version came out, which, if I remember correctly, there was a drafting error in there that instead of being a motivating factor, it was actually the motivating factor, which that would have put us out of compliance with the federal government. Now, because we're at a motivating factor, that compounded with this section that we are discussing right now, it is my understanding from the individuals that I've talked to that we will not have a problem meeting our compliance needs to ensure housing funding continues as it has. So I'm going to trust them that they have given me accurate information, Senator.
Well, I have to tell you, before we get to a final vote on this, I would like from someone some assurances. I have letters that are dated as of just a week ago
sure.
saying that they still feel that this is going to put us out of compliance and that we're going to risk about 1.1 million in federal funds that come into the state, and then some of our cities are going to risk those funds as well. For instance, Kansas City's Human Rights Commission has the same workshare agreement with the EEOC or HUD. Thank you. And so my fear is that we are risking federal dollars, and that's just with HUD and EEOC. I also have a concern that maybe if we're out of compliance with the Human Rights Act, and I know that's not your intention. Your intention is to do exactly the same thing. I've picked
up on
that.
Right, I'm trying to bring us back into compliance.
Got it. And so my fear is I need somebody to give us the definitive answer because I feel like it's all over the place. I have three legal memoranda. Some of them have been cranked out in the last few hours saying exactly the opposite thing on this issue. And I don't think now is the time, although some folks in this chamber may think now is the time to send the money back. I don't personally believe that now is the time to send the money back. And so it's something that I'm very concerned about and something I want to get cleared up before we finalize this bill. I have a couple more questions about the last portion of this bill.
Okay, which section? Which section are you looking at?
We're now on page 8, and we're in section 7, which is lines 65 through 67. We're specifically saying no punitive damages against the state of Missouri or its political subdivisions. Is that correct?
That's right, and I'll tell you why. Two reasons. Number one is because it mirrors the federal act. Number two is because punitive damages, as you know, are meant as a tool to punish, and specifically punish people into deterring future behavior. The reality is when punitive damages are issued against the state of Missouri or any political subdivision, the reality is the only people being punished are the taxpayers. The individuals having to pay for it are the taxpayers. And so to me, that there's no logic in that. We are not punishing the individual who did the wrong act. We're not punishing the city who did the wrong act. We are punishing the taxpayers, and that I do not believe is fair. That compounded with the fact that this mirrors the federal provision, Senator, is why it's in here. But I will tell you that I believe this will probably be a topic of discussion, maybe even a proposed amendment as we move forward, because I've had a couple other members visit with me privately about this as well. But that's why it's in there.
And I understand the concept of punitive damages. And one of the things that frustrates me about the bill as it's currently drafted is we are taking away that individual liability piece. And what if you have a situation where you have an employee who he's an employee of a political subdivision of the state of Missouri, and he sexually harasses or, you know, sexually assaults even a student or an employee of the school or of whatever the entity is, and that is something we want to punish, but we're taking away the ability to punish that individual. And so I'm a little bit confused how we go and punish the person who's done this bad act once it's been determined that the bad act has occurred, because we're not talking about the liability phase of it. We're talking about the actual punishment phase of it, so to speak, or the damages phase. And when you have a bad actor like that, how do you punish them if there's no punitives?
Well, once again, if you're taking away punitives, you're not, if you're using punitives, you're not punishing the individual, you're punishing the people who pay for it, which is the taxpayer. But secondly, and once again, back to my point earlier, is that, you know, there's still a tort system. I mean, there are still other legal remedies. This is only dealing with the employment discrimination law. So, I mean, I don't think that if someone has created an act that is either criminally illegal, there's a process for that. There may be other civil opportunities as well, but under the employment law provisions, the reason that we are no longer allowing employees to be held personally liable is, once again, we're mirroring this to the Civil Rights Act, 1964 and amended in 1991, so that Missouri law and federal law will mirror, and so that Missouri law will once again be practiced as it has been for nearly 40 years.
So how
that
do
should
we
be
stop,
50 years
how
by
do we
time
stop
we
the
this.
Individual predators in these workplaces that are they're doing this? I mean, what civil remedies do we have if not discrimination?
I mean, two things. I think that if there's a criminal act, then there's an avenue. And number two, and the one that I think that we really have to hold to here, is the employer. I mean, if an individual has created or has acted in a way that has tremendously put an employer at risk, then the employer has a business decision to make. And that is that individual the risk, the liability that that individual just put this company at? And in this case, or whatever case, maybe has even cost substantial dollars to this company, is that individual someone you want to continue to employ or not? And so there are consequences for the act, or their act, regardless of what it is, and that may be something as severe as the loss of their job. I mean, there are other opportunities for punishment, is my point, Senator. And the loss of someone's job, that's a pretty big statement there. If you can no longer put food on the table for your family, that's a pretty significant situation.
And will then that person, if there's no, you know, court decision against that person, and no criminal activity took place, I mean, when they go to the next employer, will they have to divulge that they were a sexual predator in the workplace?
Well, first of all, if they're a sexual predator, there's criminal laws to deal with that. I mean, in the situations where things are so bold that they would need to be disclosed, to be very candid, in most cases, I would say in almost every case, although we clearly know it's not every, but in almost every case, there are probably criminal penalties or a criminal process that could occur as well. I mean, if someone is raped in their place of work, there is a criminal process to deal with that. So to act like by making Missouri law mere federal law that we are removing any potential penalties is not an accurate statement.
We may have to agree to disagree on that one, Senator.
I understand, Senator.
Okay, and then just finally, I just want to switch to the last portion of it, which
okay.
is section relating to the quote-unquote Whistleblowers Protection Act. Can you explain what's different about this as opposed to what's in current law?
Essentially, as you know, whistleblower is not part of the Civil Rights Act. The whistleblower protections, they are in Missouri statute, and once again, through judicial interpretation, they have been broadened to the point where if someone is even alleged of potentially thinking about maybe doing something wrong, and an employee brings that forward, they are granting them whistleblower protections. The reality is the whistleblower provisions are meant to be used when an employee comes forward with fact that an employer has done or is about to do something illegal, and they should be protected for, to be very candid, being a good Samaritan,
sure,
for lack of a better term. The reality is that's no longer how it's being used in the state of Missouri. And what we are trying to do, or what I'm attempting to do, is to clarify exactly and to bring that back to its original intent. And so that is why I believe that it's relevant. I believe that it's a very relevant provision of employment law. That's why it is in this legislation, and that is why I am hopeful that it will continue to be part of the discussion as we move forward.
And so you want to bring it back to where a person is concerned that a bad act might happen or has happened, but doesn't this Whistleblowers Protection Act actually say that the alleged event has to have actually taken place, that the crime has to have been committed?
That there actually has to be a crime that's going to happen.
That's going to happen,
or
that
has happened.
That has happened.
Right. That's how the whistleblower protection has always been interpreted. Up until recent years, where it's been broadened immensely to basically what's happening, Senator, is an individual is terminated. And then what they can do is they can run forward and say, well, wait a minute, you know, or they were about to be terminated. They can run forward and say, well, wait a minute, I think this company's going to do A, B, and C, which is wrong, and therefore I should be protected under whistleblower provisions. Well, that's never what it was intended to do. Because what's happening is what they are saying or what they are alleging is not even accurate. And that's that. Unfortunately, what has happened is what was a valid attempt and a good intent at protecting employees who come forward has now being abused. And unfortunately, that means that we have a public policy debate that needs to occur to figure out how to bring resolution to that problem. And this is my proposal for bringing resolution to that.
Because my concern is that what about the whistleblower who comes forward and says, my employer is getting ready to do something illegal. And he or she blows the whistle, and then the act never takes place because the whistle has been blown. My person can still be fired because the act never took place. That's my concern. I mean, it seems like we've gone just one step too far. I agree with you. No one should be able to come in after the fact and manufacture a bunch of evidence and say, oh my gosh, I was working for this company and they were dumping all this junk in the river and that sort of thing, and I was going to say something about it and that's why I was fired. But if you've got someone who comes in and stops a bad act from happening, if that act never actually occurs, we shouldn't punish that person because of that.
Well, assuming that it's a legitimate case, and I guess that's the balance, and I believe that any valid whistleblower attempt, or I mean if it's a legitimate whistleblower protection that is needed, I believe it will be dealt with and they will be protected under this law.
Where? I mean, if
someone else has a better alternative, I am not close to listening to any suggestions, but right now I will tell you that I believe from everyone that I've talked to who practice within this realm of law, that nothing we are doing here is going to preempt whistleblower protections in an appropriate scenario. So that, Senator, to be
I'm
very...
glad to hear that you're open to that, because it seems to me that we are at some point we're going just one step too far, because it seems to me if you've got a person who has a reasonable belief and they're able to show a jury that they had blown the whistle and because of their act they were, number one, the act didn't happen, and number two, they were fired, that they shouldn't be precluded from collecting under our laws because the act never took place. They did what we wanted them to do, which was blow the whistle and stop the act.
Here was my request, and here is what, and I stay, had the same position today. What I'm asking for is a legitimate public policy that protects individuals when they have a legitimate claim at whistleblower protection, but does not allow the abuses to continue that have unfortunately begun to plague this area of law. And so if someone has a better proposal, or if we can sit down with the appropriate folks who deal with this section of law, who practice this law day in and day out, and we can find better language that you're comfortable with, that I'm comfortable with, I'm okay with that. But to date, I've not seen anyone come forward with language that I was comfortable with and that those who practice in this realm felt was reasonable. And so, Senator, that's where we are on that. And so I understand that we had a process, a public policy process that we're going to go through here. And I am a guy who actually believes the process makes things better. And so I am not standing here today telling you that I believe that nothing in this bill will change. I believe part of what we do specifically in this body down here is better, I hope, the public policy because of the process we go through. And so I look forward to working with you on that.
Excellent, Senator. Well, that's all my questions, and my amendments that I'm interested in would not be blocked by your amendment because it would be previously amended, so I'm going to end my inquiry now. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
We're on the motion of the Senator from Nottoway. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 4th, are you seeking recognition?
I'm sorry, I lost. We're on an amendment?
We're on Senate Amendment number 1.
Okay, no, thank you.
Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from Nottoway has moved the adoption of Senate Amendment number 1. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from St. Francis, what purpose? You have adopted the amendment. Senator from St. Francis, what purpose do you?
To inquire the senator from Nottoway.
Senator from Nottoway, you yield.
I do.
He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I actually listened through most of that, and I had just a couple questions.
Sure.
I appreciate you doing the bill. I as a non-attorney, you've got to have a lot of legal knowledge. Did you stay at, like, the Holiday Express last
night? I tell you, I didn't, but I tell you what I did do is actually probably one of the most helpful documents that I've had the opportunity to read is actually a memo you commissioned last August. And you asked some of the staff here to go through
a white paper on it, yeah.
Yeah, and to articulate in a common sense, common person way what the challenge is, why we have that challenge, and what is being proposed to fix it. And to be very candid, Senator, the work that you asked to be done has been very helpful as I've tried to continue to educate myself on background and why we have evolved to where we are.
I think one of the staff members now that's on the Senator from 23rd staff did a lot of that work, and we do appreciate that. And I wanted to talk just about a couple things that I have some concerns with, because
okay.
I don't think this is a completed project.
Yep.
I think that we have to adjust a couple things. Most of the stuff is fine. And I know there's been a lot of rumors out there because I've had some difficulties with the company that had sponsored this bill for the last few years or pushed this bill for last year. I have always agreed in principle to the majority of it, but there's a couple things that after your discussion that I still have a little heartburn with, and I know that Senator from the 10th and several are going to try to amend some of it, but I just thought I'd tell you where that is. One is what you just talked about, since it's fresh in the mind, on the whistleblower. I think there's got to be some legal wording in reflection of what we talked about from the white paper, of that if it weren't for their action, this would have taken place. There's got to be some language, legal language, and I'm not an attorney, you know that, that says that, because we have to protect somebody. Obviously, if we're talking about a crime, we would want somebody to prevent the crime if it could happen, and then
correct.
We wouldn't want them to have ramifications for preventing that crime, but they'd have to have the proof that that crime was going to take place. Now, that may put an undue burden on them to say, hey, I got to cover my assets here to make sure that I've got proof that's going to take place before I go and blow the whistle on it. But I think that would at least be better than saying, you know, it didn't take place, so therefore you can be fired. And I tell you what, a company is probably going to be pretty ticked off if they blew the whistle on them and stopped something that didn't take place. They're going to be looking for blood at some point. That would worry me in this. So I hope that you will be able to wordsmith it in some way that does protect that. Another thing that concerns me a little bit is on the provision, and I think the senator from 10th alluded to it a little bit, and you did change the wording to a contributing factor.
And motivating.
A motivating versus the demotivating.
Correct.
Which I was going to point out where we had some real concerns with. But the other thing that I think we have to look at some point, if somebody individually, knowingly discriminated against somebody, or in the example used, had some type of harassment or discriminated against somebody, to say that we shouldn't have any recourse to go after that person, and even in the workers' comp, that individual, I think that we have like a misdemeanor, that they could be facing a misdemeanor. There could be some other avenue where we would give them some recourse at that individual that does this, because on a lot of our businesses, and you've admitted that most of the businesses in Missouri are small businesses with just a few employees, a lot of time you said, you know, that person could be fired. What if that person's the one in charge, which in most of our companies, the one that would be discriminating would be in a small business, would be the person who's in charge. So you have no recourse at all to go after the person in charge that owns the company, the small business, if they were, in the example used, the sexual harasser, some, you might have a legal to go after them, but you don't have any way to go back after them if they discriminate and knowingly discriminate against this person. That concerns me somewhat, too. I don't know if that's our only recourse, is to go to the federal. Do you know what other states have done in this? Or is this where all the other states have done it?
Well, under the scenario that you're talking about there, assuming that the individual who makes the decision. In this case, we say it's a small business, so he owns the small, he or she owns the small business. The reality is when you punish the business, you're punishing the individual. So, I mean, you're not separating. You're not suing them as an individual. You're suing their business. But if they're the sole owner or the majority owner or even a partial owner of the business,
they would have some.
They are taking. They do have a financial punishment, for lack of a better term, for the act that they created. But once again,
what do other states do in this regard? Does everybody else just use the federal?
I'm not sure that every state does everything the same. What I have tried to do is I shared with the senator from the 10th. My goal is to try to get Missouri employment law mirrored back to federal employment law so that it continues to be practiced the way that it was for 40 years. And so, to be very candid,
we need to go back to, especially who you can sue and bring them in and talk about going back to where we were. And I don't have a problem with that. It's a little scary that we would take the federal. I don't know that anything hardly the federal does very well.
Well, in
my,
once again,
my
Senator,
humble opinion, I you know, if we
you're not, I'm, not, I'm regular, definitely not going to be the guy.
I deliver the mail very well.
I will not be the person that stands on this floor and defends the federal government for in any way, shape, or form.
But you want to be like him in this
but
regard.
But the reality is that in order to have a competitive environment from a competitive legal environment, as we're talking about job creation, economic growth, and those types of things, there is a valid argument that says that an employer should be treated the same whether they're in state court or whether in federal court. And even more importantly, the reason that it becomes so viable is because as companies are located in multiple states, if there is a state that treats them more favorable than another state, they're going to always look to that more favorable state to grow their company, to do those types of things. And so part of what I'm trying to achieve here is just make sure that whether a company ends up in state court or a company ends up in federal court, they are treated the same way, and that it's treated in a way that even in 1964 and again in 1991, everyone was under the agreement that when the Civil Rights Act was passed and when the Civil Rights Act was amended, that this would be fair and equitable treatment. And so that's why I'm taking Missouri law back into alignment with the Civil Rights Act.
Very good. Well, there's several things in here that I know that people are going to want to talk about, and they
sure
can talk about somewhat in length. I hope that we can get this bill done and we can do it in a reasonable. I think it would probably be a mistake to try to shove it through necessarily today.
Yeah.
I think that we ought to take it out and see what's shot at it and what's realistic and what are constructive improvements possibly to the bill and what aren't, and then make that evaluation and regrouping and go back at it. But I start seeing some amendments that are hitting the desk. Some of them that will come out, if it's like the past, will be very constructive things, and some of them will be stalling things. And I would hope that the fear that we need to stall it so that it doesn't get through doesn't necessarily translate into the desire to get a finished product that's desirable for the people of Missouri, and so that we can get through some of this stalling amendments and maybe put them aside if everybody's assured that this is a work in progress.
Well, Senator, I think that what I would leave with you is this. I believe that this is very important legislation. I believe that this legislature will pass it this year. What I also believe is that the public policy process, and specifically the process that we follow in the Senate, which unfortunately at times may be slow, may be cumbersome, but at the end, I actually believe it creates and produces a better product.
Well,
and
if we want to be like the House, we'll just vote on everything and PQ everything and move on. But I think that puts a bigger burden. And now that our party has a bigger percentage of this body, I think it is an even a bigger burden that if we're going to decide something that's going to law, the chances are it's going to be decided on this floor, and we need to look at it and say, is this the way it needs to be? Rather than saying, hey, we got enough people, we can override the governor, and we can do this,
I don't think any of us are true. I think that, I shouldn't say any of us.
That's
not my intent. What I believe is that, unfortunately, in the last 5 to 8 years, through judicial interpretation and judicial action, employment law has changed. I believe that it is an important enough public policy determination but it should be decided by the legislature in this process that we follow.
I would agree with you there,
Senator. Although maybe slow, I believe that whatever the will of this body is, as we take these votes up and down, the will of the body will prevail, and at the end of the day, we will deliver a bill that in my hope, will be signed and will be the new public policy of our state, which I say new, what it really will be is taking us back to where we were. But at the end of the day, the simple reality is it will have gone through the public policy process, and regardless of how many Republican members or Democrat members there are, everyone will have had the opportunity to have their concerns aired, have their amendments heard, and in my belief, the amendments voted up or down, and whatever the majority of the body decides is right, that's what we will pass out of here.
Okay. I take your word for that, we'll look forward to the debate, and I hope to be able to vote on this.
There's no doubt in my mind that this will be a marathon, not a sprint.
Well, that's good, and as they say in the federal government, I reserve my right to extend my remarks.
I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire of the senator from, I believe it's Nottoway.
Senator from Nottoway, you yield.
I do.
He yields. Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, this will be brief and friendly.
All right.
You know, I've joined you in this effort. I want to have you help me give an answer to some people that have had some concern. You know that that I'm a big fan of the federal government telling states what to do, right?
I think that you're only number two to the senator from the first.
Well, yeah, somebody's got to be number two. So here's the thing. I've had a few people that I think really are well-intended.
Yep.
And as you know, I authored SJR 15, and we just had the hearing on that today.
Okay.
And as a result,
I don't know what that does, but I assume it's good government initiative if it comes from you.
Yeah, absolutely. It just says that, you know, that the federal government, that we're not going to recognize, enforce, or act in furtherance of anything that the federal government does that's unconstitutional. But that's not what I want to talk about right now.
Okay.
I don't have this concern, but some people have had the concern where they've said, well, wait a minute, why are we doing what the federal government says in a situation like this? And I guess the best answer that I've had so far, and I'm thinking maybe you might even have a better answer, is, you know, within the construct of state sovereignty, when we look at our state sovereignty, we have the ability to look at something and say, yes, we like that idea. No, we don't like that idea. So when we find ourselves in one of those rare situations where we look at something that's been done or suggested by the federal government, a model, you might say, of the federal government, and we say, well, you know what, we like that. We like that better than what we have right now. Do we violate anything at all about state sovereignty if we say we've examined this model, we like it, and we want to use this model?
No, absolutely not.
So
because we will have made it, we as a legislative body, or we as the citizenry of this state, will have made a decision that this is the direction we want to go.
Right.
Not the federal government telling us that we have to do it.
Right. And you've been very candid about that, and yeah. I appreciate your
The senator from the first kind of gets blurried on that once in a while.
I know.
You and I, we've been pretty clear on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the fourth was the first one I saw seeking recognition. Senator from the fourth.
To inquire with the senator from Nottoway.
Senator from Nottoway, you yield.
I do.
You yield, Senator. You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. As soon as I get my microphone put on here. I will be brief.
Sure. I see you have an amendment.
I do have an amendment, and it's actually, it's the result of dealing with a constituent.
Okay.
I've got a constituent that I'm trying to help who's a 51-year-old woman with cancer, and we're trying to get her into Missouri's high-risk insurance pool.
Okay.
Currently, her premiums, even in the high-risk pool, are $2,300 a month.
Okay.
So when I saw...
Still a lot.
Pardon me?
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Her husband pays $600 a month. So when I saw your cap on damages, if she were to work for a small company, the math gets pretty easy there.
Back pay and...
And $50,000.
Well, yeah, that's right.
So, and as we already established, most of the small business, or most of the companies in Missouri are small businesses, right?
That's correct.
And that's where all the growth is. So more and more people.
I'm not sure that it's all in that, you know, 5 or 1 to 5 or 5 to 20, but I think it's in small business. However you define that, I think that's an accurate statement.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think just by the very nature of the caps, and I think you've already agreed, we can't dictate good morals to our business leaders.
Correct.
But if this is really about good public policy, at a minimum, I would think when we can quantify the loss to, well, is she going to make it 2 years or not? I don't think that's good public policy. I think the juries are already empowered to make a judgment of what damages should be. I think by its very nature, a judge can rule whether those damages are excessive. So I'm not trying to delay your bill. I'm not
sure.
Trying to kill it. I'm just, for the people that are healthy, it's fine. But for the people who are most vulnerable, I think the damages are way too low. And that's why I have an amendment. And if you don't
sure,
mind,
and
I'll
I, and I understand. I guess, you know, once again, as I have shared earlier, is my fundamental belief that Missouri employment law should mirror the federal employment law, specifically around the Civil Rights Act. These provisions and these caps came from that. That's why they're in there, Senator. It's why I will defend them. It's why I understand you're going to offer your amendment. I respect it completely. We just simply have a disagreement, just a different perspective. And once again, the will of the body will ultimately prevail. So I completely understand your thought process and why you're doing what you're doing. And at the same time, I hope you understand, I'm just trying to keep this legislation as close to the federal guideline as I can.
All right, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Senator from the 4th.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President, I do have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
Yes.
Are you asking for a waiver of the reading?
Yes.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Would you like to explain your amendment? You want to move for the adoption?
Yeah, Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the amendment. What it does on page 7, section 4, it eliminates the caps on the damages.
The senator from the 4th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment number 2. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from Nottoway.
Thank you, Mr. President. Although I understand and respect the difference of opinion I have with the senator from the 4th, the reality is that this legislation, and the reason we're doing this legislation, is to keep Missouri law in alignment with federal law, with the Civil Rights Act. And so, therefore, with that said, I would humbly request my colleagues defeat this amendment. Thank you.
Senator from the 13th, what purposes do you seek recognition?
To inquire the senator from Nottoway.
Senator from Nottoway, do you yield?
I do.
He yields. Senator, you may proceed.
I have been listening to the debate. I wonder if there's a possibility when I leave the legislature in a year that I can clep through law school and just take the exam.
You've offered that a couple times, haven't you?
No, that was to be able to teach political science in college. I am looking at your substitute, or your Senate committee substitute,
okay,
which is .02C, correct?
Yeah. 03C is the one I have.
And then I'm looking at the wrong one. While I'm talking to you, can I have 03C brought to me? Or do I have it? Okay. Page 7. You are listing amounts.
Right.
Caps.
Correct.
That you can receive. This is currently in federal law and discrimination.
That is my understanding, is that the caps that we are proposing here mirror the caps at the federal level.
So in federal law, there are listed caps on
discrimination. There are caps. That's my understanding, Senator.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. President, can I inquire the senator from the 10th?
Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
She yields, Senator. You may proceed.
At this stage of my political career, for the last 6 years, I would go to my colleague that practiced law from the western side of the state, and he sat right here, the senator from the 8th, and he could enlighten me of what questions I had. He is gone. He is no longer with us. So you are now, for the next 2 years, my legal The Godfather. Consulate.
Where do I send the bill?
The problem is once you step on this floor, your services are for free.
Well, you'll be glad to know I'm a pro bono lawyer, so I don't bill my clients anyway.
In federal law, are there these caps that the senator from Nottoway said he was told that there are caps in federal discrimination law cases?
It is my understanding that there are caps in federal law. There is a disagreement right now, though, between the senator from Nottoway and me about whether these caps are the same as under federal law. The way I read this bill, as it is currently drafted, I feel that it says that damages are capped only on, that the only damages you can get are back pay and interest on back pay.
I heard that discussion.
Yeah, and so I feel that, yes, there are caps in federal law. I don't know what they are. I haven't looked to see if they're exactly the same. I think the way the bill is drafted now, that we are saying you cannot get the same damages as you can under federal law.
With us bringing this in line with federal law, are we limiting the ability of the individual to take their suits to state courts? Will they still be able to go to state court just under, since we're putting it in state statute, just under the mirroring legislation?
We're not limiting the ability of an individual to bring a case in state court, but it is my opinion that we are making it so that we're making the setting the bar so high that a plaintiff could not be successful in state court.
Educate me on that argument.
So you want to know why that is?
Why we're, with that change, how is the bar being raised?
Well, right now, and this is getting into kind of a tough area for me because, as you know, I don't practice this area of law, but it's my understanding that right now claims are brought in state court because federal court is, frankly, incredibly difficult to prevail. For instance, 85 to 90% of all of these cases are dismissed on the summary judgment phase, and they never make it to the jury trial. So in Missouri, at least, these cases are making it to the jury trial level. And it's my understanding that it's not resulting in some huge, payoff for plaintiff's lawyers around the state. I have a list of the verdicts in the Kansas City area over the past 5 years, and plaintiffs are losing more than 50% of the time, and their average verdict is only about $136,000 for actual damages. So it's not like it's any better, but at least they get their quote-unquote day in court. On the federal level, it is my understanding and what I've been told that these cases never hardly make it to the jury trial because they're consistently thrown out in the summary judgment phase. And so this would give Missouri employees a fighting chance by saying in Missouri, we're not satisfied with the federal standard. We want to do it what's best for Missouri.
We're putting these set dollar amounts in state statute. Are these set dollar amounts in federal guidelines or in federal law?
I believe they are in federal law, but I think they are in federal law, Senator, yes.
How long have they been in federal law? Because, as you and I know, a dollar in 1964, it was worth a lot more than a dollar in 2011?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that question, and I'm going to put that down as one of the questions I need answered before we let this bill come to a vote. So the question that we have now is, are these federal caps in statute or in some other guideline, or are they part of case law, or how are they defined right
how
now,
was, how,
and how long have they been in effect?
How did we come up with, for employees of businesses with 5 to 100 employees, no more than $50,000? And then 100 to 200, and then 200 to 500, and then businesses with more than 500.
I don't know where those came from. I mean, if
maybe
we...
when I get done inquiring you, I'll go back. Because let me throw an example. I had a business once, and I've had several family members with businesses. So at times when I stand up for the worker, I understand the business component.
Sure.
There is a big difference between an employer of five and an employer of 100. No more than 50,000. A lot of times when we have defined employers, we have said employers of 25 or fewer employees as opposed to 5 to 100, because actually a judgment of $50,000 of an employer of five could pretty much break the employer. I would think 25 and below would be a category, and then you're going above to 100. So that's some of my questions. Where did we get these numbers? Did we pull them out of the sky? Is it part of the white paper they talked about?
My guess, Senator, from just spending the last hour and a half speaking to the Senator from Nottoway about this, my guess is his answer will be this mirrors federal law, because that was the answer he gave to every question that I had. I don't know, because I haven't had the federal law in my hand, but that's my guess where that comes from.
Well, I think during this process of finding where we came with these numbers, and if it's in federal law, whether it's federal rule, or whether it's the white paper that was being discussed earlier, I don't think it's a large question where we got these numbers from. And what was the history behind coming up with these numbers? And the issue is now that we're dealing with this amendment to delete all these sections, I guess would be a good time to find the answer to this.
I think you're right, because, I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, I mean, small businesses, there is a huge difference between five employees.
Well, we all have
employees.
Staff, and I'm sure staff is listening to these inquiries, our staff is, and maybe research is, to assist us. And you are going to research it. I'm going to inquire the senator from St. Francis, because he was discussing a white paper that they worked on over the years on this issue, and maybe it came from that research.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. President, can I inquire the Senator from St. Francois?
Senator from St. Francis is not on the floor, but is coming through the door. Senator from St. Francis, do you yield? He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
The senator from the fourth, he read my mind. I was actually going to say the city of St. Louis, but he stuck up the four fingers. So the senator from the fourth has an amendment to pretty much delete page 7 of the Senate.
I saw it deleted this and deleted that, but I didn't know what deleted.
What it is it's the limits put on of what a employee can sue. What's the ceiling?
The caps
for an employee. I talked to the senator from Nottoway. He had stated that he believes this is codifies with federal law. I talked to my new legal staff from the western side of the state, because the senator from the 8th has since left us, and we have a new senator. Nothing against the new senator, but that was, as you recall, my legal advisor throughout my first 6 years. She has agreed pro bono to take that occupation during my last 2 years in the Missouri Senate. I want to know
is
where
it related
these...
to Sonny Bono? Because I heard that she does a lot of pro bono, in charge of pro bono at her workplace, so she must
yes.
be an expert in pro bono.
Yes, yes. An attorney that doesn't charge, that is a dream
God,
attorney.
Isn't that something? What's your question?
You are discussing a white paper with the... Do you...
Yes.
Part of that white paper, is that where these numbers came from and these caps came from and the amount of employees?
I don't know if that was specifically in the white paper, but it talked about making the caps where the federal would to have some uniformity.
I'm trying to find out where these numbers came from, because what we are doing is we are debating whether to delete these or if you amend them to bring in line. I haven't received...
I think they are the federal... I asked some attorneys that came by to see me today, and they thought that they were in the federal line, too. He didn't remember the author of the white paper, but what we talked about is we used last year's, and last year's was trying to bring them in line with the caps of the federal. Yeah.
An employer of an individual of five individuals is much different than an employer with individuals of 100 employees. There's a big span there.
Right. Doesn't this step up?
They're both capped at $50,000. So I'm trying to figure where we got these. Were we just sitting down, or is it in the rules? I'm trying to find, while we deal with this, that simple answer. And I was wondering when you...
So is that the reason we're trying to break them? I would prefer we have some caps. I know you guys don't agree with that, but the question whether there's...
I'm not disagreeing with caps at this stage of the game. What
but you're,
I'm trying
you're saying
to do
the
is,
levels are not...
Where'd we get these numbers?
I made them up, like most statistics.
Well, that's probably...
68% of us said that we made them up. I don't know. If we can't, do we know that... Does the sponsor of the bill know? Have you inquired of him?
I've inquired of him.
You know what? In 1991, there was an amendment that put in the caps, and these are the caps.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and re-inquire the senator from Nottoway then, if that's okay.
You don't believe I just came up with that?
Well, no. If he's got the answer now, I think he went and received the answer. I may
go
as well
ahead.
Inquire
of
him.
I don't mind not being inquired of. Thank you.
You would do good on Family Feud.
Thanks. Survey says...
Mr. President, can I inquire the senator from Nottoway?
Senator from Nottoway, you yield
you
to
Senator
13.
You understand I'm trying to
he
get
Senator,
where we got
proceed.
These numbers?
I do, yep.
So you have gone out...
I went and checked, and essentially in 1991, the amendment that I talked about that clarified a motivating factor, in that same amendment, that's when they put the caps in place. So it wasn't done in 64 under the original act. It was done in 91 under the amendment to the act.
At those dollar amounts?
At those dollar amounts, Senator.
And the dollar value has increased of purchasing power, would
sure.
you say, since 1991?
Sure. I mean, it's been 20 years. It's definitely different.
With not having a problem with your caps, would you have a problem with seeing what the inflation factor from 1991 to 2011 was?
Seeing or changing the
or changing.
Language? Changing the
yes.
language, probably. Seeing. I'm always open to seeing.
Okay. Well, that's a good response.
I just want to be honest.
Thank you. Oh, you are. And the other thing, five employees compared to 100 employees, that's
yeah, a big range.
Big variance.
Again, just mirroring the federal. My goal as I did this was, I said, to just make sure that Missouri law mirrored the federal law in terms of employment law. That's why it's in there, Senator.
All right. Thank you. You've answered my inquiry.
We're on the motion of the senator from the 4th. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Close.
Senator from the 4th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 2. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The noes appear to have it. The noes do have it. Senate Amendment Number 2 fails. Senator from the 11th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
President, I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
Mr. President, it has been distributed, and I would ask for a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator from the 11th.
Mr. President, as way of explanation, if I might inquire...
Senator, Senator, you want to move for the adoption?
I'm sorry. I appreciate that. I will move for the adoption amendment. And as a way of explanation, Mr. President, if I might inquire of the Senator from Andrew...
Senator from Andrew, do you yield? He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. I'm not gonna, I know you've been up quite a bit today.
All right.
But a couple of things I wanted, you and I had talked a little bit about this issue, and the senator from the 10th raised the issue on the back pay and whether your bill only addressed back pay. And I know you're probably at the point where, you know, you get enough lawyers in a room and you come out disoriented and even more confused. So I think that this is something that you and I discussed.
Yep.
Let me go over it with you and just kind of go through it. The whole premise of your bill, whether right or wrong, is to get back to federal law.
Is to mirror Missouri law.
Right, Missouri law is to follow that.
Correct.
What this amendment does, the practical effect is, first we started out with an amendment that was 2 pages long, which restated all that. But for those who were involved in the debate on back pay, the following language in this amendment, actual back pay, interest on back pay, other equitable relief, and other damages up to the limits of subdivision 2 of this section. That covers, in federal law, and I have a copy of 1981A, damages in cases of intentional discrimination in employment. And that section lists in limitations compensatory award damages awarded under this section for future pecuniary losses, emotional pain, suffering, inconvenience, mental anguish. I'm right. Quoting from the federal law.
Right.
Now,
All
I want to get back to is, I think the senator from the 10th raised an appropriate question about whether this covers back pay or not.
Right.
And whether we might as well make it clear if we're mirroring that.
I'm so fine with that.
Successfully so far, I have taken 2 pages and turned it into this. By the way, you might wonder, other equitable relief,
right?
Actually, there's a U.S. Supreme Court case that defines equitable relief as front pay and other issues.
Right, the issue we talked about.
So the case is actually Pollard versus DuPont, which established the term equitable relief. So these cases go to a jury, they go to a judge. Equitable relief mirrors the federal statute by covering front pay and some of those issues that you discussed.
Okay.
So I wanted to let you know that the term equitable relief covers front pay.
Okay.
I originally had in the amendment.
Yeah, there was a front pay. Yeah.
That I had specifically front pay, and then the practical effect of the amendment is then we mirror your federal law caps, for want of a better term, on definition of size of business. So that's the practical effect.
Yep.
I also want to make clear, and I hope there was no misunderstanding, this is for both page 7,
right,
and page 9, the at will. And my logic of that was that if it's good for one, it should be good for the other. And I don't want an at will case to be treated differently. If we're contemplating bringing this all to mirror the federal statute, why should we leave at will just at maybe a lack of clarity as far as back pay?
I am very comfortable with what you're doing. I think you're providing the clarification necessary. I appreciate you and the senator from the 10th raising it. I appreciate the senator from the 10th raising it. I appreciate you helping resolve it. I am supportive of your amendment and happy to do what I need to help get it put on the bill, Senator.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President.
We're on the motion from the senator from the 11th. Does
Mr.
any
President,
senator...
I would be, as way of explanation on the amendment,
sorry, Senator.
This amendment hopes to correct the issue of front pay and other compensatory damages, and it the language mirrors and is affirmed by the U.S. Code on discrimination and also the Supreme Court findings on a Title VII case in Pollard versus DuPont. So with that, I'd be happy to yield to any questions.
Okay, we're on the motion. The senator from the 11th. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the Nottoway.
As I said earlier, I believe everyone has worked on this language together. I think we're all comfortable with it, and I would encourage the body to adopt the amendment. Thank you.
Does any other senator wish to speak on the motion from the senator from the 11th? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close, Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 3. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You've adopted Senate Amendment Number 3. Senator from the 5th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the senator from Nottoway, please.
Senator from Andrew, do you yield?
I do.
He yields. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I got a couple of questions for you. I've been listening to the debate now for about an hour and a half or so, and you have referenced several times the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the amendments of 1991. And from what I'm understanding, that you're using them to make your case to bring forth this piece of legislation that you have. So am I understanding you to say that we're taking Missouri back to those laws at this point? No?
No.
How you're using that as the basis
for this.
Here's
what's happened. For 40 years, the way that Missouri law was dealt with, or the way that it worked, was it mirrored or closely tracked the federal guidelines, just as the federal law is. Now, what happened is in the last 7 years, let's say, essentially what has occurred is through either jury instruction or judicial interpretation, there became case law that moved the way that Missouri practiced or that Missouri law, employment law, was determined. And as you know, once a case is settled, then what ends up happening is that case law becomes precedent for all the other cases that follow. And so as the first few decisions were made, they slowly began to move us away from the way that we've always practiced employment law in our state. And as that continued, we got further and further away. And now we are dramatically different. And so what this language does is this brings us back to the state law and federal law in relation to employment law mirror each other. And specifically, what this would do is essentially this would ensure that moving forward, that Missouri law, employment law, is dealt with and practiced just as it has been up and through approximately 2005 to 2007, in that time frame. So employment law did change, Senator, mm-hmm. but it changed in the last few years. Mm-hmm. This is an attempt to have that public policy debate mm-hmm. and bring it back into alignment. That is what I've done in this bill.
So essentially you're saying that the protections we had in those two previous civil rights movements, the amendment and the law itself in 64, was the basis of what we used up until 2005.
Correct.
Okay.
64 and 91,
I'm sorry. Up until 2005. Since then, case law has taken over, and most of what's been happening in employment law has been based on that.
Correct.
And that's what you've referenced in this bill to remove, basically.
Right. So what I've done, that's correct. I've removed the case law and said in Missouri, our public policy is going to be this statutory law.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said before, I believe that how we deal with employment law in our state is important. I believe it's a public policy decision that should be decided in the legislative process, not mm-hmm. the judicial process. And that's what we're doing today.
What is your feeling about how Missouri managed to get from those first 2 points to 2005 when it changed? What exactly happened there?
You know, I'm not a person that wants to stand here and criticize the judiciary unnecessarily, but the reality is that through the jury instruction and in the judicial interpretation, essentially the appellate courts and then the Supreme Court dramatically change the way we deal with employment law. That's the reality. So it's unfortunate that that's occurred, but that's where we are. And so the legislative remedy to that is statutory law that clarifies how we as a legislature believe employment law should be dealt with. And that's what we're doing.
In making that giant step from 1991 to 2005, then it's been a matter of interpretation. Were there any gains in there that are worth keeping, Senator?
My goal in this, and if there were, I'm unaware of them. I've tried to be very consistent in this process of keeping us mirrored to the federal process, the federal requirements, the federal caps, all those things that we've encompassed in this bill. So, you know, once again, it really comes down to, for me, who's going to determine public policy? Is it the legislature or is it the judicial branch? And I fundamentally believe it's the legislature's responsibility to determine it, and then the judicial branch's responsibility to ensure that it happens. And so that's why I've done what I've done, Senator.
Seemingly, though, we've had so much pushback in various areas on this particular legislation, Senator. Of course, we've all gotten literature from Paraquad and from the deaf associations and organizations, from civil rights organizations. It seems as though their feeling is that they are once again exposed, that they yet are not even protected by the amendments from 91. The whistleblower portion of your bill specifically.
Sure.
But I also look at the case law that has occurred that really did move itself to protect the worker, and I'm concerned that the worker is not protected here. How do you answer that?
Well,
how do we keep them protected?
Well, I fundamentally believe that when the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964 and amended again in a bipartisan manner in 1991 at the U.S. Congress, that no one fundamentally believed that they weren't protecting the employees. Like, the reason we did it was to ensure equality, to ensure those protections are in place. I mean, if Martin Luther King, who was one of the most outspoken and strong advocates for equality that our country has ever seen, if he was comfortable standing next to the president as the signature was put on this act in 1964, I can't imagine that the fundamental that to argue the point that we're hearing, you would have to fundamentally argue that what they did in 1964 and then that they amended again in 1991 for clarification, that has been fundamentally flawed for almost the last 50 years now. Mm-hmm. Senator, with all due respect, I don't believe that. And as for the whistleblower provision, you actually referenced it, so I just want to answer, and I hope the senator from the 10th is listening, because she raised this issue earlier, and I went out and clarified specifically on the part of preemptive, you know, preemptively stopping bad acts. On page 8 down in there, starting on in section 3, which is line 9, it says protected person, and it clearly defines who the protected person is. It says that a protected person is a person who's reported to the proper authorities an unlawful act of the employer or its agent, or who reports to an employer serious misconduct of the employer or its agent that violates a clear mandate of public policy as articulated in a constitutional provision, statute, regulation promulgated under statute or rule created by government, or a person who's refused to carry out a directive issued by an employer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I was told out there is that this serious misconduct and the clear mandate of public policy that would cover that situation that we discussed. I mean, because that is one of the points that I think we're all fundamentally in agreement of, is if there is a horrific act that is about to occur, someone comes forward and proactively stops that. That is good. That is a good thing that we want to encourage, and that we want to protect that individual who was bold enough to come forward. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to make sure I clarified for you, and hopefully let the senator from the 10th know that when I followed up on it, I was told that protection would fall within that section. So I just wanted to
Well, Senator, you, I'm sure, are clearly aware that the Civil Rights Act of 64 and its amendments in 91 were geared toward protecting the individual. It was not about businesses and not just about the individual at work, but also in housing, in education, and just in the basic treatment of a human being in our American society. So it's not just about the worker and the, it's not just about business. And my feeling here, it just kind of disturbs me some that it continues to be the basis for what you're doing, which some of us are feeling like is hurting the worker again. So I had to clarify in my mind where you were coming from, how you were using that.
Yep, and I would tell you this. If Missouri law had deviated the other way, where we were so far to the other in the other direction that employees in our state were being discriminated against, and our courts had created a scenario by which fair justice was unable to be delivered, I'd be standing on this floor trying to change it that direction as well. There is a legitimate balance that has to be met.
Right.
And I believe that Senate Bill 188 creates that balance. And
well, that's a matter of conjecture.
That's
how you see. I see it. It's skewed in the other direction, and we want to go back to some times when indeed we were protected, and it did provide the basis, evidently, for the cases to be decided as they were. So it's just a matter of philosophy.
You bet.
My questioning was certainly just to get out and have that discussion about the Civil Rights Act and exactly how it's being used here and what protections were yet left.
Correct.
Now, I have distributed some amendments, but I will not be pursuing those, Senator, and thank you for allowing me to talk with you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
We're on the motion to the Senator from Nottoway. Does any other Senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 10th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Has it been distributed?
It has, Mr. President. I would request a waiver of its reading.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator from the 10th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move for adoption of this amendment. When I was inquiring a few minutes ago of the senator from Nottoway, we talked briefly about the fact that this bill is actually abrogating one of Missouri's improved jury instructions. And while it's my understanding that in the past we have abrogated case law through statute, I wasn't here for that. Apparently it was in 2005 as we pushed through worker comp issues and tort reform. It's my understanding that it's very unusual and maybe has never happened that we've abrogated a Missouri-approved jury instruction. This is a process, frankly, that – oh, thank you very much. This is a process that has been utilized in the state for quite some time. We have a fair and balanced system where we've got the Supreme Court has a group of attorneys on both sides of all of these issues that come forward to put forth these approved jury instructions. We've got defense lawyers and plaintiff lawyers who work on these together to make sure that we have the best approved instruction. But that's not where it stops, because at the time of trial, the lawyers are able to argue to the judge which approved instructions will be used. And so I feel like we should just remove this. All this does is simply remove the section that says we're abrogating an approved instruction. I don't think there's any reason to do that. It's a process that can be handled on its own, and it's a precedent I don't think we want to set. So I would be happy to answer any questions.
Senator from the 10th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 4. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from Mercer, what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire the senator from the 10th.
Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to clarify here. I'm looking at page 6, and on lines 42 and 43, you're deleting those and leaving the Waterhouse versus Hopkins. So essentially what you're deleting is the sentence that says the General Assembly also intends to abrogate, and then those three instructions, essentially.
That is correct.
Okay, so just so everyone understands what those three instructions are, those are the instructions that change the factor from that put in the contributing factor standard versus a motivating factor.
And it, and that's also, that's 31.24 and 31.27. And my understanding is that 31.25 was the instruction that prevented the business summary judgment. So I appreciate and respect your position, but Senator, I'm gonna oppose it. So thank you for the inquiry, Mr. President. I would like to speak on the amendment.
Senator, you have the floor.
I would humbly request my colleagues join me in defeating this amendment, as this by taking these out, we again create a conflict that will unfortunately not provide the clarification that I believe is necessary for the courts. Thank you, Mr. President.
We're on the motion of the senator from 10th. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 11th.
May I inquire of the senator from 10th?
Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
She yields, Senator. You may proceed.
Senator, I was going from another crisis to another crisis, and I know there's a lot of amendments on that. What amendment are you on?
The amendment I'm on does not have a number across the top, but it's the only one on your desk with my name on it, and it says
deleting all said lines, inserting there a lieu of Waterhouse versus Hopkins.
Yeah, and essentially what I'm doing here, Senator, is in this Senate Bill 188 right now, we're doing a lot of abrogating. We're saying that we no longer agree with the case law in the state of Missouri, and we're specifically including cases, which I understand is something that we rarely do, but that we did do it in 2005. The one thing that I found odd, because frankly, I've just not seen it happen, and I can't find anyone who has ever seen it happen, is that we're now also abrogating Missouri-approved instructions. Those are things that, frankly, will correct themselves. If they no longer mirror state law, then they won't be used as instructions and will not be given to the jury. And I just think we're interfering with a process that works, and I don't see any reason to include that language. So that's
what is the significance, Senator, of Waterhouse versus Hopkins? What premise did that establish?
Oh, no, and the only reason that has that is that's where the sentence ends.
I'm seeing. So you're just referring to
That's okay. Just the last sentence. Unfortunately, I think that my amendment deleted the sentence or the last of the sentence ahead of it. So all I'm doing on.
Okay, I wanted to make sure that there wasn't some significance.
No significance.
Okay, so you're coming in on line 42.
And all I'm doing by this amendment is I'm deleting the sentence. The General Assembly also intends to abrogate MAI 31.24, MAI 31.25, and MAI 31.27. That's my sole purpose on this amendment.
What is MAI 31.24?
I don't have those approved instructions in front of me. The senator from Nottoway has just said that those instructions relate to the business judgment rule and relate to the definition.
Are they instructions to the jury or
they're instructions to the jury, yes.
Okay.
And those instructions are drafted by basically a committee of the Supreme Court. They're drafted with members of the defense bar and the plaintiff's bar, and they come up with and it's a process that, frankly, has worked, and I don't see any reason to interfere with. They come up with approved jury instructions, and then those are available to provide to the jury once the argument is made in front of the judge which jury instructions will actually be given.
Okay. And then do you know, and I heard your inquiry earlier from the senator from Andrew, do you know what Doherty versus the City of Maryland Heights established, and do you know what Coranda versus Mallant Croc? Lomax versus Christ were established?
No, the reality is, Senator, that I don't know what the facts or the legal issues at play or the holdings were in any of those cases that we're abrogating. And it starts with McBride versus Rittenour on page 5. And then we say we don't like that, but we do like Price Waterhouse and its progeny. And then we say we also like McDonnell Douglas versus Green and its progeny, but we don't like Doherty versus City of Maryland Heights,
Carando, Lomax, and all of those.
And Price Waterhouse versus Hopkins is.
We need to keep conversations down so the senators can hear each other. Proceed, senators.
Price Waterhouse is a 89 case, and McDonnell Douglas versus Green is a 73 case.
Yes.
And so then we're abrogating in 207 cases and an 08 case.
Yeah, so essentially what we're saying is that the feds got it right in 89 and 73 with Price Waterhouse and McDonnell Douglas, and that our own state got it wrong in 2007 and 2008, and therefore we should once again turn over all of the rights of the employees of the state of Missouri to the feds rather than trusting our folks here in Missouri to make the right decision.
Okay. I heard you're on just another subject while I have you up. Under the whistleblower protection?
Yeah.
Under the category, I'm on page 8, on line 9, protected person.
Yeah.
A person who has reported to the proper authorities an unlawful act of the employer. And the senator from Anjou said that this was his attempt after working on it to define that. What if the act itself is not illegal, but it's improper? Or you raised the point, what if it's not illegal yet? Right.
My concern is we're not giving protection to those whistleblowers. That's my concern. And it is his understanding that we are providing.
I mean, current law, based on case law, would say you just have to have an expectation, right, that it was wrong.
You know, I don't know the exact standard.
Or unlawful.
I think it's maybe a reasonable person standard. And granted, a lot of this is based on a conversation that I had once again in the hallway. But it's my
understanding. I'm trying to read the bill now, and as you know, I have been somewhat responsible for stopping this bill at some level for 6 years.
So you may be more of an expert on this than I am.
Well, one variation of it was I noticed they don't have this, is that you had to prevail in front of some law enforcement agency or prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with an old variation of this bill that I noticed with Senator Anjou, I think it's improved, is that you don't have this obligation on the part of the fired employee that they've then got to prevail in some criminal case.
Yeah.
Because the problem is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Enron was not an illegal act, was it?
Oh, some of their practices that led to that?
Right.
You may very well be right, but it ended up ruining a lot of lives.
Right. The savings and loan, those sorts of things, those aren't per se illegal act, but there's an obligation to find out. The current law contemplates that there's a responsibility for people's right to know, or that it's the right thing
sure.
to report something you might believe, but maybe turns out not to be that.
Absolutely, and it seems to me that the standard we should go to in this state is whether a reasonable person would believe that this act would be unlawful or that it would cause some harm if it weren't reported. And I don't think it goes that far.
Have you written that out yet?
I have not.
Because I don't think that's bad. Because we use reasonable person all the time.
And it just seems to me that I
agree. And I mean, the problem with this whole issue, and correct me legally, if the senator from Anjou has stepped forward and attempted to define whistleblower.
Yes.
Right? He's attempted to define whistleblower. The problem in current law is whistleblower per se is not defined, right?
That is my understanding.
You've got two dueling court cases, one that says Company A was right to fire, Company A was right to fire. You've got another one that says, another court decision that said they were wrong to fire, right?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
And so in the status quo, you've got to kind of go off of dueling court decisions.
Exactly.
Okay. So you came up with one that a reasonable person.
It seems to me that that would be better kind of clarify what the public policy is of the state of Missouri, that a reasonable person, because the senator from Nottoway is right, there are people who are fired for completely legitimate reasons who then come back in and manufacture something to try to say, I was fired because I was going to blow the whistle on something. You have people who just flat out don't tell the truth. So let's,
but you have employer. But you have employers. Did you get that? Anyway, they have employers that do the same, right?
Right.
Employers lie. Employees
absolutely
lie. You know.
And so a reasonable person standard seems to me to be the standard that makes the most sense. Because then you've got something that a jury can sink their teeth into and they can say, all right, was this person acting as if a reasonable person would? They saw something that maybe, like you said in the case of Enron, wasn't illegal, but they knew was going to result in, you know, thousands of people losing their life savings. And so is that the sort of person that we want to protect? I think it is. I think it is.
Now,
even
how did,
if it wasn't an unlawful act.
How does the federal, how does this federal discrimination, do they define, they're silent on whistleblower. So am I correct in saying that the whistleblower component of his district per se, that's not really covered by the feds, right?
Yeah, as a man, that, I think that's exactly what he said, that this is, that when we move to the Whistleblower Protection Act portion of the bill, that we're not mirroring federal law anymore.
Because there is no federal
because
law
there is
per
no
se
federal
on whistleblower,
law.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Senator, I think the senator from the 4th has an amendment. I'm hoping we don't get this, we don't find some urgent need to get this done tonight.
Well, Senator, I agree with you.
Because I think the senator from Andrews seemed open to kind of like making this, and I think we want to get it, I think he and everybody wants to get it right. I mean, we've come in 6 years a long way. I mean, and you know, it's, this is advanced, and he's taken, I think, some amendments that, you know, part of it I can live with the federal argument, you know, but I would just note that the whistleblower part is not, you know, is not covered by that. So that's the only part that troubled me on the whistleblower that remains is the dialogue that you had with him, where a reason, where somebody, maybe it doesn't turn out to be illegal, but maybe it's a good idea for somebody to say something, you know. And I'm not sure, I haven't pulled the Enron case, but if memory serves me correct, I'm not sure that was illegal, but it was probably good that we knew what was going on.
Yeah.
It's probably good that the stockholders knew what was going on, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's the only part that I think we can maybe,
you know,
tweak and refine.
I think there's that portion, and then there were some questions that I asked earlier that neither one of us knew, meaning the senator from Nottoway and I, neither one of us knew the answer to. And so I need to get those questions answered before I'm going to get comfortable. And then, of course, as you know, we sit here, and then the longer we talk about this, the more messages come in on little pieces of paper, and text messages fly in, and emails and that sort of thing. And raising,
well, generally it's a good idea
concerns
to ignore most of that.
I usually too try to ignore most of that, but
I plan, as you know, on being just very irritable the last 2 years. You know, I've told you that up front.
And
I was just going to be.
I understand.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, because the hallways. You know, as you know, I'm the oldest serving senator now.
In seniority terms.
In seniority
not
terms.
In age.
I'm the longest serving
senator.
You're
the longest
now
serving
in the
senator
term limited world. And
so that means that you've probably
got
a little
crankier. I can just tell you,
after
session 9 or 8, the hallways, you know, they just start getting on your nerves after a while.
Yeah, I could totally understand that. And so the fact that you would start to ignore some of those would
probably
make a
lot of
sense.
And I'm in year 6. I feel so attached to this bill because I'm in year 6 of this bill that
this is,
it feels like a difficult, you know.
It's
just
been a big part,
yes,
of your senatorial career.
Yes,
and
it has.
And I don't think that you should take that lightly. It's been,
yes,
a big,
so,
part.
Yes, so, you know, now that it continues to show life and improve under the flexibility of the senator from Andrew, which I'm hoping will continue.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just,
I mean, this is the type of bill.
I have mixed emotions on, you know, that I'm so used to
being against this bill, that it, as it improves, I find less and less excuses to be against
it. It's a difficult place to be. It's one of those bills that I refer to as a zombie bill because you think it's dead, but it just keeps coming back to life. Well, now the zombie's starting to maybe be kind of...
It's almost becoming human.
Human.
Yeah, it is.
And it's taking on sort of this thing that you might want to be friends with.
Yes.
And you don't really know what to do about those conflicted emotions.
Becoming an acquaintance of.
An acquaintance. A friend may be too strong of a word. I understand that.
So. Well, I think the senator from 4th has an amendment. I don't know if you have an amendment, but I it's my hope that we get, keep. All right.
Oh, is mine still pending?
You're still.
Oh, that's a great amendment.
Mr. President, thank you for the inquiry.
We're on the motion of the senator from the 10th. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator, the 13th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
To briefly inquire the senator from the 10th.
Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
She yields. Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, if we're getting at the point to close on some of your amendments, I'd like to be refreshed. What are we on?
Absolutely. And I apologize, Senator. I'm having a hard time hearing. There's some conversations over here to the right.
Take the conversations outside. So the senators can debate.
Sorry, I turned 40. I don't hear well anymore.
You're doing the amendment that deals with a court case?
No, actually, this amendment, all it does is it removes... Do you have the bill in front of you by chance?
I have the bill in front of me.
Okay, so
I came prepared this time when I inquired.
If you turn to page 6 of the bill...
Yeah, all those court cases?
Yeah, all I'm doing on that list of court cases, which is Section 5, I'm taking out the very last sentence, which has to do with Missouri-approved instructions. And the reason I'm doing that is I have a fear. I mean, this bill concerns me because we're specifically going through and abrogating, saying we no longer acknowledge that this is good law. We're doing that to case law, and I'm fine. I mean, I don't agree with it.
Do we do that a lot?
Apparently, we don't. Apparently, we did it in 2005, which was before my time, on the tort reform and the worker comp stuff, which didn't work so well because now we're having to come back and fix it again this year. Does that ring a bell with you at all?
Oh, it rings a bell.
Okay.
I get to say when that bill comes up, I told you so. They won't like hearing me say that, but we told them when they were passing this that you're taking away the workers' right, that they're going to be able to go into court and sue civilly, and the whole idea of workers' compensation was to take away the workers' right as long as they are guaranteed a set of benefits. So we were right. At that time, it was the senator from the 7th who was trying to practice law on the Senate floor who prevailed.
Well, I, Senator, don't want to... in the next 3 years have to come back and say, I told you so. I'd rather get it right now.
What is MAI?
It stands for Missouri Approved Instruction.
And what is Missouri Approved Instruction?
That is a jury instruction, and it is drafted by a group of lawyers on both sides of this issue. So you've got the plaintiff's bar and the defense bar, and they work together on a committee to draft what they call an approved instruction. And then those are adopted by the Supreme Court, and then they are available for the lawyers on both sides of an issue when there is a jury trial, and each side is able to say, I think that these jury instructions should go to the jury, and the other side should say, I think that these instructions should go to the jury, and then the judge decides which instructions they get. And
do we not?
I just think that
I don't recall ever having Missouri approved instructions.
It's because the process works and there's no reason to get involved in that process, and that's why I want to take that out.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Why don't you just try to take just the subsection 5 out to take all those cases up, and you're creating new law you're putting in new law to codify federal law. Do you need all these court cases to be abrogated to just pass the law? And then after you pass the law, legislative research or administrative rules are going to set the rules of how the law should be interpreted or enforced, whether it be the Missouri Human Rights Commission that enforces them. Would that be simpler?
Yeah, it'd be simpler just to take all that out. If what we are really trying to do is mirror federal law, then let's just say we adopt the...
Maybe my question should be to the sponsor, why we... Have you inquired to try to just take out court cases and just do the law to make it less...
I've tried to ask that question. You know, I think we're just at a disagreement as to whether or not... And you'll have to ask the sponsor that question.
I'm going to. I don't want to keep delaying or them thinking, but I got serious questions on this. So that brought up a question.
And when I asked that question,
it was the senator from Stoddard just gave me a handout while I was inquiring of you. Maybe I could inquire of him.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Senator from the 13th.
Can I inquire the senator from Stoddard?
Senator from Stoddard, do you yield?
Certainly.
He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
Senator, what did you hand me?
You wanted to know what an MAI was, and that's it right there. That is specifically, I think the one I gave you was 31.24.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, in that instruction that was crafted out, the contributing factor standard, that's
how
they came up with it. I think I highlighted it.
Yes, you did. Senator, do you think it's good public policy to list all these court cases and all these MAIs in statute as opposed to just writing the law and letting the department, I guess, write the rules? And then we have a I guess I got to turn my back to you so I don't get hammered on. Sorry, I don't have my piece that you could see my face. In all seriousness, putting all this case law in state statute, I've never seen it done.
I think we've done it before. I don't know if we've listed that many cases or not. One thing for certain, when you put that in there, they clearly understand what you're wanting to abrogate. Sometimes it's best to be straightforward.
Okay.
With the courts.
All right. Thank you. Mr. President, can I inquire
the senator from the 13th? Senator Andrew, do you yield? He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
Senator, I just inquired the senator from Stoddard. He gave me an answer. I was going to ask you the same reason of putting so much case law in state statutes.
Right. So
it's how you feel and the people you've worked with feel you can best write how a court should interpret something you are putting
this in state. The case law being abrogated as well as these instructions. Those are the cases and the instruction that moved us away from following the federal guidelines or the federal law. And so what I wanted to be very clear about was that the way that we've been practicing employment law for the last 5 to 7 years is not how we're going to practice it.
On discrimination. This is discrimination. This isn't employment. This isn't whistleblower. This is discrimination.
Right.
Okay.
Which is all, I mean, that's... When I say employment law, that covers all the. I mean, I consider that all employment law.
Right, but the cases that you have brought forth, like the senator from the 11th was inquiring, those cases deal with, I take it, discrimination law.
Those cases are now the precedent-setting cases that have caused us to veer away from. The way that we used to practice federal the federal law, the way that we used to practice employment law in our state. So the reason that we're striking those cases essentially is to say this is no longer the way we're going to do it. The public policy that we as the General Assembly are going to set is this, and that's why I felt we had to strike those. Otherwise, there's all that case law that's still precedent law and I didn't want any confusion. We're not doing it this way. We're not doing it the way of A, we're doing it the way of B.
I guess in all fairness, offhand, do you know what the cases did?
Well, I don't know every one off the top of my head. I did pull the
Maryland Heights
instruction stuff, the three.
Yes, the senator from Stoddard gave me.
So those are the contributing factor standards and then the business summary judgment. I mean, that's essentially the basis of the bill. And so without striking those instructions, what you're going to have is this this conflicting language that one is going to be through what the courts created, and the other is going to be what we as a General Assembly has said is our public policy. So
I guess I'm going to try to do some research what all these court cases.
Sure, I understand.
did.
I don't believe we're going to perfect tonight anyway, Senator, to be very candid with you. My intent is to defeat the senator from the 10th Amendment. The senator from the 4th has one I'm going to take, and then we're probably going to lay over.
Okay. Let me throw this idea just to sit there and sleep on.
Sure.
Putting all these cases in these, what's MAI again?
That's the approved instruction.
Okay. Missouri Improved Instruction. Sorry.
That's all right.
I'm repetitive. I just worry about putting all this in. Is that the future we're going to have? And we always joke about these statute books getting bigger and bigger.
Well, I think that...
I always thought we passed the law and then the lawyers go and research court cases to defend their defendant of what the law is. And you're basically saying you can't use these court cases.
No, what I'm saying is that the judiciary changed the way that we practice the law. And what I'm saying is as we as a public body are going to decide what the public policy is. And my belief, my proposal that I'm putting forward is we're no longer doing it the way the judiciary has determined. We're going to do it the way that we as public policy makers decided.
So that I'm not continuing to delay, I'm going to have my staff research these court cases tonight and bring that for discussion tomorrow and let you proceed with how you're wanting to go.
That's fine, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Luke Purse, what purpose do you seek recognition? Inquire briefly of Senator from the...
Senator from Nottoway.
Nottoway, do you yield?
I do.
He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Just listening to some of the discussion with the last couple of colleagues, in your characterization, what is the issue that the courts generally take issue as far as what the law reads or what statute actually says? I mean, isn't it that we don't clarify enough, that there's not clarity within the statute? I mean, isn't that what we hear time and time and time again?
Yes.
When we actually accuse the court of being activist, right? Because there's not clarity in the law. And I'm just, I look at what you've got here, and it seems to me you've got clarity.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Absolutely. And I think that this actually warrants 2 points. The first point is that the majority, the reason we are having to do Senate Bill 188 is because the judicial branch changed the way that we practice law, the way employment law was practiced. Now, I've been told, and I've not done the research to determine whether this is legitimate or not, but I believe the source to be accurate, that prior to 2003, when the Supreme Court ruled that there was a constitutional protection or a constitutional guarantee of a jury trial. Prior to that, almost all of these cases went through federal court. In 2003, to be very candid, a left-leaning court determined that a jury trial was a constitutional guarantee. Well, then what happened is that same left-leaning court then went out and created all this case law that's now the precedent for how we're going to practice employment law.
And where are they trying those cases now?
Now they're all going to the state court.
All going to state
because
court.
It's moved far left, actually further left than any state in the nation. My point is the judiciary should not have that responsibility. That's the responsibility of the legislative branch. So maybe we don't want our employment law to mirror federal employment law. And if that's what the will of this body is, so be it. But I believe it should.
Right.
I believe that's the way we practiced it in this state for 40 years. And prior to a court changing that through numerous steps, I mean, it wasn't one step from where we were to where we are. It was gradual steps by our friends across the street. And I don't believe that's their role.
Right.
And what I'm saying is all of the steps that they have taken, as we move forward from when this bill becomes law, we're no longer considering those steps. Our public policy for employment law in our state is this. So I don't care what they've done over here when they rewrote Missouri employment law. That's no longer relevant. We are telling them very clearly, you are not going to follow that any longer. What you're going to follow is what we outline and we articulate in Senate Bill 188.
And I just wanted to make the point, Senator, that I appreciate your clarity within this piece of legislation, because I think that's exactly what the courts are asking us for.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that I just, the point that I want to make in reference to the senator from the 10th, I've had attorneys come to me in confidence and actually say that there is legislative actions being taken by the court through jury instruction.
There's no doubt.
Okay. That they are legislating through jury instruction. So it's important for us, if we have found some of that, that we include that, you know, within this legislation.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, Senator, to be very candid, those jury instructions are what led to the contributing factor and what has also led to, I don't even know why I did that with the second component, but I mean, they are the two, and the business judgment. I mean, they fundamentally change public policy through jury instruction. Well, wait a minute. Public policy gets debated through a process in this building, and that is what we're doing today.
Right. Thank you, Senator.
We're on the motion of the senator from the 10th. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 10th, you are recognized to close.
Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from the 13th?
Senator from the 13th, do you yield? Whoa. Yeah. Did not recognize
yes, I
you
yield.
To close? Oh, you don't have
I
to
yield.
Close. I'm sorry. Just checking.
I yield.
Senator, thank you for yielding to the inquiry. A question that you asked me got me thinking. And you asked why I was just taking out the approved instruction portion and not all of the cases.
Yes.
And while we were talking about that, some text messages came in about some of the other cases that are in here. I've been told specifically that one of the cases that we are saying that we should not abrogate but follow is Price Waterhouse v. Hopkins and its progeny, and apparently that case has been overruled by the 1991 Civil Rights Act in D.C. So, I mean, this case that we're saying we should follow, it's not even good law anymore because it was kind of supplanted by the 1991 Act. And so it occurred to me that it would be a lot cleaner and easier if we just did what we allege that we're trying to do, which is mirror federal law, and we not go through and specifically abrogate cases. So I wanted to let you know that I'm actually having a substitute amendment drafted right now that would do that.
It would just take out subsection 5?
It would take out subsection 5. That will leave some other cases in that we are saying right now we're going to, thank you, abrogate, and we may have to address those on an individual basis, but could you please...
I'm just one of those individuals, like you get tired of hearing, because you're an attorney, I'm not an attorney, so... But I think you're just complicating things when you put all this case law in there, and then when you're... Thank you. Then when you're adding the MAIs, I think you're complicating it further. So that's where I was, trying to make it much more simpler. So.
I agree. And I mean, if our end goal truly is to mirror federal law, then I think there's an easy fix, and we can just say that we're adopting federal law as state law and that
no,
we don't need to go through all this.
No, this is a sincere inquiry, a sincere amendment, and see what happens.
All right.
I'll support you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would request unanimous consent to stand at ease.
Hearing no objection. There is
President, no I ask the bill be put on the informal calendar.
The bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from the, with the amendment pending. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
On the order of business of reports of standing committees. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Send your report forward, and when the report arrives, Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Bill 101, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator for the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of introduction of bills.
We're on the order of business of introduction of bills. Senator from the 17th, Clay.
President, I have two bills.
Send your bills forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bills.
Senate Bill 428, introduced by Senator Ridgeway, an act relating to reimbursement for the transport of persons to and from mental health facilities.
Senator from Clay, do you wish to explain that bill?
No, Mr. President, no explanation necessary.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill 429, introduced by Senator Ridgeway, an act relating to nurse staffing levels in health care facilities.
No explanation necessary, Mr. President.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Stoddard. Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 430, introduced by Senator Mayer, an act relating to workers' compensation.
Senator from Stoddard, do you...
This piece of legislation modifies the second injury fund.
Senator from Lewis, do you have a bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills.
Send your bills forward. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill 431, introduced by Senator Munslinger, an act relating to direct mail marketing.
Senator, do you wish to explain that bill?
No, sir.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill 432, introduced by Senator Munslinger, an act relating to transparency in state purchases.
No explanation needed.
Senator from the 8th.
Bill.
Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 433, introduced by Senator Krause, an act relating to deeds of trust.
Senator, do you wish?
No explanation.
On the order of business of introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection of the Senate, we'll go to the order of business of announcements. I ask you to recognize me.
We're on the order of business of announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Tomorrow, we'll go back to Senate Bill 188, and then bills that have been previously announced, including 133, 243, and possibly Senate Bill 8.
Okay. We're on the order of business of announcements. Senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to make the body aware that there will be a prayer breakfast at Mail's Country Cafe. That's at 2421 Industrial Drive. It'll be tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. That's at Mail's Country Cafe. Everyone is invited.
On the order of business of announcements, Senator, the Transportation Committee will meet tomorrow at 8:15 in SCR 1. For an executive session only. On the order of business of announcements, Senator from the 23rd.
No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from the 23rd. All in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate stands adjourned under the rules.
careful as we possibly can.
Is it okay for what? Yeah. Yeah.